Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome you to the September 10th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, and economic general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by city council and is not affiliated with any profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes and new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Personal preference will not be the basis for any decisions. Sign postings. Member of the boards receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites and the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. This month, we have one item on consent. It is the petition by Homeline Architecture, file number 25-004103, COA for 425 East York Street. Is there any member of the public or a board member that wishes to remove this item from consent to regular agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
Rowan, so moved.
Thank you, Rowan. Do I have a second? Hamer, second. Thank you, Ms. Hamer. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, that motion is approved for the consent agenda. You should have received, and there are some printed outside, the regular agenda. Oh, did I skip minutes? I did. Sorry about that. No, sorry, I'm right. Adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of today's agenda?
Helms, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Do I have a second?
Woodfield, second.
Ms. Woodfield with a second. All those in favor? Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is approved as presented. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to this agenda and have been posted online. Is there a motion for approval of the previous meeting minutes?
Hamer, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Is there a second?
Helms, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the minutes has been approved and passed. We don't have any items that have been requested to be removed from the final agenda. And we don't have any requests for extensions either. So we will move on to today's regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance or questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. If you are unfamiliar with the new-ish procedure, if you are a member of the public and you wish to speak, you need to fill out a speaker card and give it to Bree, and she will give it to me, and I will call you up to the podium when it's your turn. After public comment, the petitioner will have an opportunity to respond, and then the board will enter into board discussion, at which point no further public testimony can be received unless requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We'll structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you have none. If you are joining us virtually, locate your control panel and use the raise your hand feature, and I will be notified and will call on you for your comment. First item up on the regular agenda is the petition of J. Elder Studio. File number 25-00498 COA for 219 East York Street, new construction.
Afternoon, so this is Kelly Mitchell. Again, the applicant is requesting approval for new construction small parts 1 and 2 for an accessory dwelling unit at 219 East York Street. The applicant is also requesting approval for two variance recommendations requests. One is to increase the lot covers to 80% where 75% is allowed. The second is to request is to allow the accessory dwelling unit to be 42% of the floor area of the principal building where 40% is allowed. As the board likely remembers, this project was heard last month. While staff recommended approval, the board voted to deny the project due to its incompatibility with design standards and with the visual compatibility standards. The applicant has since reapplied with a new set of drawings, and this is what's going to be reviewed today. Overall, the accessory dwelling unit is 25 feet tall, excuse me. The top of the parapet is 2 stories tall. As mentioned, the staff report, the mezzanine does not count towards overall stories. The applicant did indicate that the mezzanine is a total of 100 square feet, which is less than 1/3 of the footprint for the building. The ordinance does specify that mezzanines can be no more than 1/3 of the floor area. And this was brought up in the pre-meeting, but staff did reach out to the city as well about this. According to the city, the stairs do not count towards that 1/3 floor area. Staff found that the accessory building is in scale with the surrounding context. The building is about 7 feet shorter than the primary building at the highest points. It is not overshadowing the neighboring properties greatly. Also, all but one of the accessory buildings on this lane is 2 stories in height. There is one-story dwelling, and that is a non-contributing building. So there is precedence for 2-story structures on this lane. DISO's perspectives were provided by the applicant to show how the building relates to the context, particularly with this neighboring accessory building and with the primary building. Since the previous meeting, the applicant has proposed dormers in an altered roof form from that previous design. Dormers are seen in the context on larger buildings such as the Davenport House and the Kehoe Inn, as well as on smaller buildings as well. So staff did find the dormers in this case to be compatible. The dormers currently have no eaves, however, on the 2 interior facing sides. So the applicant will either need to add 8-inch eaves or apply for a special exception from that standard. The applicant will also need to make sure to update all the plans to indicate that the pitch of the dormer roof is 212. It's currently listed as 1.5/12, but the applicant is willing to adjust that. The proposed roof form is an unpitched roof with a parapet. This is seen not only on this lane, but throughout the district, so staff found it to be compatible. One thing of note is there's no screen course shown on the parapet wall. That's usually a standard that has to be applied. But for majority of the outbuildings on this lane, you don't see a stream course. So staff found that those precedents not to have it. So staff found that to be okay. And finally, as previously mentioned, the applicant has applied for various recommendation requests. One is for the lot coverage. They are asking for an 80% lot coverage instead of the 75% that's allowed in the zoning district. The second is for the size of the ADU's footprint is currently at 42% of the footprint of the main house. It's allowed to be 40%. In this case, the accessory building is relatively small. It's about 325 square feet, so it's a modest sized building. The lot is also just over 15 feet wide, so it is a very narrow lot. The staff found that the lot size was not caused by the applicant, and overall staff found that the various recommendation requirements were met in this case. So with that, staff does recommend approval of the project itself with the conditions seen on the screen, as well as recommend approval of the two variance recommendations request as requested. So with that, does the board have any questions?
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff? Mr. Coleman.
Yes, I need clarification on the issue of the mezzanine. My understanding is the mezzanine is measured as 1/3 of the space in which the mezzanine is contained within, not within the floor area of the actual building. It is tied to the space that the mezzanine resides in. And if that's the case, that mezzanine is greater than a third of the space in which it resides, which would put it more at about 85 square feet allowed as opposed to 100. So I need that clarified from the standpoint, because by the code, that's the way a mezzanine is determined, not square footage of a floor area.
Yeah, so I did have the definition in the staff report. It says an intermediate level between the floor and ceiling of a story's aggregate floor area is no more than one-third the area of the room or space in which it is located. And staff interpret that as the general footprint. If that's incorrect, we can ask applicant just accordingly.
Well, I think it clearly says the room which is located, which is consistent with what I just said. So the floor area of that whole floor would not be appropriate. It would be the area of the space it's in. Okay. So we would need to calculate it based on that.
The changes.
Sorry, if you have a question, just state your name for the record.
Robert Helms. This is a continuation essentially of 25-002575 COA, which was denied at the August meeting. And you state that in your, report. Do you consider that the changes that have been made are sufficient to constitute a new project? Or is this simply redone makeup on the big?
In this case, we did consider it sufficient, which is why we accepted it. And technically, there is no rule to say we can necessarily deny it, but we highly don't recommend that somebody comes back if it's identical. But in this case, we did deem it sufficient to be heard again.
Well, just looking at the public comment, it doesn't appear that most of the public agrees with you.
Yeah, but this is what staff stance was when we wrote it.
In other words, it's staff's opinion. It's different.
Yes, staff's understanding it's different enough.
Nagel? Could you clarify where the ordinance stands on fixed windows? Seeing as there's a lot of fixed windows in the south facade of the property and it's facing a right-of-way, where does the ordinance stand on fixed windows being allowed on new construction?
Yeah, per the ordinance, if the windows facing a street shall be double or triple hung, awning, casement, or palladium. So in this case, it says street and not public right-of-way. So typically when it says just street, it's the actual primary street, not counting the lane.
I think that the lane not being a street is where we're having a lot of problems as a board in other areas. I know that we've heard things before where the lane did constitute a street, and now we're veering towards the lane doesn't constitute as a street. And I know we just had a discussion about that in the pre-meeting, but we have heard things before where we have stated lanes are considered streets in Savannah. So I think that's where the stickiness lies, is that fixed windows are not allowed on any street side in Savannah. But
and then also in the past, typically when lanes were considered, it's right of way and not streets. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, and Kelly, if I could just ask you to clarify that just for the public record. So the interpretation of the way that it's written into the ordinance is when the ordinance code references a street, it refers to the primary
street. So in this case, will be York. But if it says right of way, it will be either lane or street. And in this case, it says street.
Okay, thank you. Are there additional questions for staff?
I do have one additional question to that, Nagel. Just out of curiosity, in ordinances in general, because we've come across this before, we've always applied, and from what I remember, we've had the tendency to apply lanes as streets. How many ordinances does say right of, and I don't need an exact number, but like, are there ordinances where it says right of way, or are the ordinances written to where streets is the common language used?
I have not seen street regularly used. I know majority of the time I see streets in reference to like solar panels.
Okay.
But I feel like majority of the time it is right away.
Okay. Thank you.
The applicant is here as well.
Are there any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly.
Actually, Helms, I have one probably not relevant thing. How do they propose to build this without going into the neighbor's property?
That'll be a question for the applicant.
Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
I have your...
Jerome Alda with JL The Studio. Good afternoon, everyone. Well, just to dive right into it, I wanted to address Shedrick, Mr. Coleman, your comment. It is a mezzanine. What I want to clarify for you is that it's fully within the volume that is a space. And when we did the calculation, so it's open. This is not a solid wall. Open and communicating within it. And when we did the calculation, we were still within the 1/3. And if that's something that we need to adjust slightly, if it's determined any differently, when we go into permitting, we will adjust. That's one. The second portion would be, per your question, Ms. Nagel, I think the majority of our windows are operable, and we can make certain other ones operable as well. The ones that would be difficult to make operable are these three right here at the mezzanine. All others could be made operable. And then the only other thing I wanted to share, do you have that one? Hold up. And per a lot of the discussion that occurred in the previous meeting, as well as...
I asked the speaker to keep the microphone near your mouth.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, thank you.
And per discussions that happened in the previous meeting, as well as earlier discussions about the form of the building, that's where we chose to go with the gable and also bring in a dormer, wide dormer. One thing that we also went out to do, and that was a change in form significantly. So if you were to think of such a small building, but we tried to ensure that we were in keeping with the heights of eaves along that street. And just for everyone to understand, on this lane, the majority of the buildings on the lane are two stories. And this is the entrance coming off of Abercorn Street. And as you can see, we've gone through and we've documented the measurement to the underside of the eaves. I'm not going to go through every single one, but we went through the entire lane. And this is a neighboring carriage house, which we also just wanted to document the height of the building to the best of our ability. But we believe that the changes that you've seen, as well as the form that we've taken, is appropriate. And we do agree with staff recommendations. So what you can see here, which is what I wanted to zoom in for, Well, we've addressed the eaves on either side of the dormer as well. So we are in agreement with all of staff recommendations. Any questions for me?
Thank you, Mr. Elder. Are there questions for the petitioner? Mr. Coleman.
Yes, Coleman. On the issue of the mezzanine and the floor area, you have an enclosed bathroom that takes away from the floor area. You cannot count
Correct.
That bathroom. So when you take the two areas that you do have that's left open, you come up with an area slightly over 200 something square feet. You divide it by
53%,
it's less than 100 square feet. So
yeah, so we can adjust. What we can do is adjust ours on the northern side and reduce that side of the mezzanine, and you'll make sure that it works within that code. Because as you know, we will have to go back and forth with them on it.
Yes, I just want it clear that what we're looking at right now is not a two-story building because the mezzanine as presented to this board is not a mezzanine, it's a floor. So I get that you can change it, but right now as presented, it is what it is.
Well, I'd ask that if that's something that's wanting to be added to a recommendation, that it is added as ensuring that the mezzanine is adjusted to meet that.
Yes, that's up to the board based on that decision.
I'm just saying that that's what I'd like.
Now, wouldn't it make more sense as a board if you have to adjust the size of your mezzanine to continue this item rather than approve it with a condition?
I think that's up to the board. I believe if that condition is there, it's something that we will have to do no matter what. So again, that is based on board's consideration. But if it is asked to continue, that's fine. We will do that as well.
There are additional questions.
Nagel, I do have two questions. One, and I know we're at height mass point, but are the doors we're looking at, the garage door and the little side door, are those your doors or are we just looking at placeholders for?
It's the garage door and then this one here will be, there's an existing series of railings that are internal to the property, wrought iron, and we're going to be turning that into a gate.
So it's going to be a gate. Is it going to be a see-through gate or a solid gate door behind a gate?
You can see through it.
So it's a pass-through.
It's a wrought iron.
Okay. And then the garage door, well, I guess we'll see this in part two, but I just wanted to know if those were your garage and your gate or if those were just placeholders for part two. And then the other question, I guess in terms of the windows, it's not so much are they operable or not? It's more the style of the window. Because of visual compatibility, when I asked about the windows being fixed, that's just because the way the ordinance reads, it's a double hung window. You know, whether it's operable or not, they could be made operable, yes, but just in style, it's a far reach from the ordinance. So it wasn't, my question wasn't coming from a perspective of are they operable? It was more of a style and visual compatibility question.
Understood. I believe the ordinance does allow for casement windows, which is what this is. So.
Are there additional questions for the applicant?
Woodfield, yes, please.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the color of the face of this facade facing this lane is supposed to be. Some of your renderings have it as a dark color.
It's a green, a darker, more muted green color, and it's in our submission. The renderings are for a visual aid, but can sometimes be difficult to can't find it. Thank you.
The applicant is certainly able to answer that, but Ms. Woodfield, I did want to just remind you that we're looking at part one, height and mass.
No, it's part one.
Oh, part one and two. My fault. Okay. My apologies, Ms. Woodfield.
One of the concerns here that we've heard is that it's not visually compatible because it's so dark. You know, there's sort of a color palette and a sense of you know, a range of colors, and this is quite strong compared to the neighboring projects. So that's what I wanted to address. That drawing that you had a few minutes ago was a more muted color. So are you proposing the muted color or the dark color?
I believe it's still the darker color. It just depends on how that light hits it. Along the lane, there are an array of colors. There's brick, some of it is dark. There are dark bronze roofs. There are many different types. So I think there's a wide enough variety along that lane. The neighboring building is all brick with black. And I could pull that up here again, possibly. So as you can see, This is the neighboring.
Yes, but not the whole entire, you know, 22 feet tall facade. That is what I'm trying to point out is that it is, you know, deviates quite a bit from its visually compatible contributing properties.
I think what we still would like to propose is that darker color up to the eave and then also on the dormer. And then our two side walls are meant to be the stucco. So, and a lighter colored stucco similar to what you see on this building here in the lane.
But can you put up, please, you know, what you're proposing?
Yes.
There's some confusion.
Find it again. Right here.
So the side walls are lighter.
Yes.
But the facade facing the lane is a pretty consistently dark color.
Dark color, yes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Helms, picking up on Mrs. Nagel's comments, when I look at this building as proposed, it is dark, and the windows, being casement windows and the type of the windows, are not echoed anywhere in the surrounding environment. And therefore, it is, in my opinion, not visually compatible with anything in the surrounding environment, both from a darkness point of view and from the shape of the windows and the way they operate. And because we are looking at part one and part two, it means that if there is any kind of approval of this project, then you can proceed without coming back to the board as long as you quote unquote meet the conditions. Now, we shouldn't be in a position where we have to enumerate 83 different conditions for you to follow and then approve it. We should simply continue it, and you fix the problems, and we come back, and then we can look at what you're actually proposing to do, as opposed to you're standing there and saying, well, I'm going to change this, I'm going to change that, and maybe I'll do this, and maybe I'll do that. That's really not a very good way to do things, in my opinion.
Caitlin here, just wanted to provide a point of clarification to address that. So when anytime conditions are added to something, this isn't the last stop for somebody's drawings. What happens is that the drawings have to get stamped not only by us, but several other inspections in the city. We would then verify that those changes were made, and we will say conditions are met. If they are not met, we will not stamp them, and they will not move further. And furthermore, the city zoning people will also look at the COA, what the COA says and what the drawings say. So there's several people verifying that the changes have in fact been made.
As a further point of clarification, you approved this, the staff recommended approval of the prior project, which we turned down. And now you're going to be the judges as to whether the changes have been made.
Mr. Helms, I'll ask you to keep your comments respectful or directed to a question concerning the ordinance.
And staff isn't approving something that the board did not approve. We go by what the decision was.
Thank you, Caitlin. Did that answer your question, Mr. Helms?
Not really.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Thompson.
My question may be really for staff, but what struck me about this application, and the question I have is, to what extent is a new construction that is of the period, is a modern addition to the building, to a historic building, and that not it's not imitating the historic structure? To what extent should it be different? And it is different, darker color, different windows, it projects. So I guess my thought is, that this project falls within that scenario where it's supposed to be different because it's new and added to an historic building, which I guess you could take it down again. Isn't that part of the criteria to be able to remove it without damage? But that aside, I think this application seems to meet that being different from the historic building it's attached to.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to have a point of order that we have discussions like Mr. Thompson's made during our board discussion as opposed to generally having it right now while we're supposed to be questioning the petitioner, if that's okay.
Yes, thank you for that point of clarification. Were there any additional questions specifically? He was saying that that type of discussion is more appropriate in board discussion, not while we're asking questions of the petitioner. That's okay, Mr. Thompson. Were there any other questions specifically for the petitioner?
Yes, Nagel. In terms of the two variances that you're requesting, mm-hmm. I heard the part about the lot is 15 feet wide and, you know, it's like a need and it's like a, you know, well, they can't fit it, so we need the variance, right? Why do they, what is the real need behind the variance other than wanting a bigger property and making it into an ADU? What is the need according to the petitioner?
The need is in order to, so let's take two steps back and I can pull up the site plan. We are basically building, not basically, we are building exactly within where the current carport, well, it's not even a port, but the parking area is. We're not expanding that area. And actually, we're building slightly smaller than that area. We're on the other side of the existing wall. So we are still smaller than what is currently covered by hard surface for parking. So no matter whether it were a one-story building or just a car shed above it, we would still be over the lot coverage because of the size of that lot and the existing size of that open area for courtyard.
To be able to qualify as an ADU?
No, it's not about the qualification as the ADU. It is in order to even...
So you have two variances, right? You have a lot coverage.
Correct.
That's going over that 80%, and you have the footprint going over that, the 75% to 80.
I follow where you're coming from. So in order to park the car and have the clearances that we need, that's where we ended up just over. And because of how small this lot is, every inch or two that you add suddenly increases it. And that's where we ended up at the 42. And that's also how it pushed us to 80% lot coverage.
You know, yeah, I guess
we were
my thing
to go
is
smaller. We won't be able to fit the car in that covered area.
I think my thing is always if they wanted a bigger.
It wasn't about.
Should have bought a bigger property. You know, that's all. It's like, hey, we're trying to, you know, ask for variances on a property that was just purchased. They knew the size. They knew what they wanted to do. Why are we asking for variances? They should have just bought a bigger property.
That's, well, as I mentioned, if they wanted to even just do a garage for a single carport, they would have still been over because the existing area that is used for parking is over that square footage.
Understood. So it's mostly about the parking that
No matter what, it would have been over.
Got it. Thank you.
Are there any additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Elder.
Thank you.
We have several speaker cards, so I will remind you to also keep your comments to 3 minutes or less and be respectful and only point out things that were part of the application or inconsistent with the zoning ordinance and design standards. First, we have Jim Hunsrucker. And please state your name for the record.
So Chairwoman and HDR Board, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Jim Hunstrucker, a 36-year resident of the Landmark District. The proposed ADU must visually relate to the primary building and the contributing buildings on the lane, which is its context. Citizens in the Landmark District and the visiting world depend upon the HDBR and the MPC staff to uphold these legislated requirements in the ordinance. There is absolutely no visual compatibility with this 1872 house, which it is required to complement. The contrast is jarring, both height and mass, not to mention the materials and the color palette. A near property-wide dormer is not found on the 200 block of East York Lane. The next two slides are to prove that from the public right-of-way along Barnard or along Abercorn and Lincoln, the project's towers towering over the contributing buildings would be visible here along Abercorn Street, here along Lincoln, and then on the south side of the lane, the contributing buildings would be disrespected by the proposed design as it establishes dominance in height and conflicts in the design elements. Similarly, on the north side of the lane, four houses on York constructed between 1853 and 55 have carriage houses. There's even a very rare original privy. Now, this ADU commission of submission indicates the width as 15 feet 2 inches. These are recent Superior Court filings encompassing the past 12 years. These printouts are for the board. You'll see the legal description is 15 feet wide on the north and south property lines. The Historic Preservation Commission recently continued a project that had a property line in question. The proposed carriage house requires too many conflicting design features that disregard the ordinance and enrich the applicant. The public expects articulated reasoning and decisions and since a project like this is seen as risking the integrity of the Landmark District. Thank you, if you'd like.
Thank you. If you want to leave that with Bree, she can make sure that it gets circulated to the board.
Certainly.
Next up, we have Corey Hyland.
Thank you very much. I'm Corey Hyland. I live at 211 East York Street, and mine is the property that's shown right next to the one that's being proposed. Just move this down. I'm unable. Can you help me? Sorry, y'all. So I just want to. I'll be really brief. I just want to read from the HDBR Manual Code of Ethics. Quote: Commissioners and staff should provide opportunities for meaningful public participation in the work of the commission. Unquote. So that's what we're doing now. 235 letters have been written over the last 10 weeks opposing these two buildings. 235 letters, over three a day for the last 10 weeks. Why? What's the purpose of the public weighing in if the HDBR are going to not read or not understand or not take into account the public? The latest proposal is still not visually compatible in height and mass and with the contributing buildings, and it's inconsistent with the design standards. And I mean this with all respect, but I ask you, is there any world in which the words visual compatibility apply to these buildings and the buildings around it? The zoning code for the historic district says the architecture of an accessory building, quote, shall be designed in a similar architectural style as the principal building, unquote. Again, in what world is this the case? Quote the commission, the HDBR Code of Ethics again, quote, commissioners and staff should recognize that the historic built environment changes over time and encourage new development that respects the historic character and fabric that preceded it, unquote. Having brutalist three-story buildings jammed into one-car parking spaces surrounded by one- and two-story historic structures in the landmark district is exactly what your code of ethics says not to do. Now, I understand y'all have a difficult job. Things are not always easy, but this is an easy one. Please do the right thing and again reject this proposal. And if it comes up again and violates ordinances and common sense, deny it again and again and again until it's finally right. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Danielle, I think it's Ox or Oak.
Oh, I'm going to wave my.
Okay. David Schultz.
My name is David Schultz, and I'm going to just speak a little bit about what Mr. Hyland just pointed out, that 235 letters were sent. Some of them were sent three times, yes, because this has been presented three times. Without insulting anyone's intelligence, I have no confidence that these letters are read, or we wouldn't be back here again and again. So here's what we're writing about. Here's who's writing. And here's what they're saying. No, no, no. Stop this madness. This is Historic Savannah, not Epcot. Stop giving variances already. You're going to variance our beautiful, unique historic district right out of existence. I really wish you would all start making people meet the requirements. The idea of squeezing a garage with an additional two-level, one-bedroom apartment above it into the width of a one-car parking space is ludicrous. It is totally incompatible with the other structures along with the lane. Along the street is like some Soviet-style architecture. All of the carriage houses in this lane are two stories or less. The proposed three-story structure would dwarf neighboring buildings. I find this new proposal laughable to think that anyone would see this as an acceptable change from the prior submittal. This, I believe, is the third time I have written to oppose this proposed monstrosity. By resubmitting nearly identical plans under the guise of a new design, the applicant is attempting to wear down the opposition. Why must we continue this charade is beyond me. Please help. This reeks of poor performance, not by the board, but by the review staff. This structure looms like a cargo ship in fog. It sets a precedent for future atrocities to be built in our beautiful landmark historic district. I spend significant time and financial resources in order to contribute to appropriate standards within the historic district. This building does not meet those standards. As a neighbor with an ADU, I'm an advocate for ADUs. However, ours was held to exacting standards for architectural appropriateness. While I'm not opposed to infilling with modern buildings in the historic district, the infill project must be sensitive to and compatible with the surrounding building and materials, scale, fenestration, and siting. This York Street Alley project is not sympathetic to the existing buildings in material and massing, and therefore I oppose the project as presented. Please stop this travesty from being constructed. Are you kidding me? This is so outrageously out of place. This is a joke. Do our voices matter? They should. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Andrew Jones.
Good afternoon, Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. First, before my main argument, the window configuration that was referenced before, that part of the statute references the word street, does not reference right of way. And you, therefore, you must use the definition of street types in section 13.5. Those street types, that street type definition includes lanes. That's very clear. The right of way issue is a red herring. You have a definition, you need to apply it. Mr. Thompson referred to the requirement that an addition be different. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe this constitutes an addition. This is a standalone building. Staff can correct me if that's not correct. Back to the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition's perspective, we oppose the variance. Given that apparently it's only reasons for the garage, one has to ask why not just design the back of the garage to be open So you drive your car in and then maybe the hood projects a little bit beyond the garage. So there are ways of designing this that you wouldn't need the variance. But separately, the variance does not meet any of the criteria. First one, general consistency. They argue they need it to have an ADU. They do not need this variance for this to be an ADU. It would just be a smaller ADU. The special conditions cannot arise from the actions of the applicant. As mentioned before, the lot was 15 feet wide when they looked at it and decided to buy it. It was their choice. So the special condition is arising from their actions. Had they wanted a larger ADU, they could have purchased a larger lot. The special conditions should not be purely financial in nature. These are clearly financial in nature. They're trying to make money by developing the property, and they want to make it bigger. The literal interpretation of the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights enjoyed by other properties of the same size. So it can't deprive the applicant of rights that the other properties have. Well, there's an identical lot to the west. It's the other half of the pair of houses. So that owner doesn't have the right to build anything beyond 75% lot coverage. So you can't say that this person now can. The other criteria is regarding a minimum variance. No variance is necessary to make possible the reasonable use of the land, building, or structures. They can build a building here. It just needs to be smaller. And that's perfectly reasonable use. And the variance shall confer on the applicant's property special privilege that is denied by this ordinance to the owner of the property immediately to the west. So that's another criteria that they don't meet for the variance. So the variances have very, very specific criteria. And I don't think this project meets any of the criteria, and it has to meet all of the criteria.
Mr. Jones, if you can wrap up your comments.
Yes, I'll just finalize. This is not visually compatible, especially with regard to that predominantly glass facade. And in relationship to materials, the vertical wood slats are inappropriate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Steve Edwards.
Thank you. I'm Steve Edwards. I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. We have two concerns. The first one relates to what Mr. Thompson was discussing a moment ago. There's a requirement that applies to accessory development units or dwelling units, sorry, that isn't part of the visual compatibility rules. As you know, and as the staff points out, the ordinance requires that an accessory dwelling unit be, quote, designed in a similar architectural style as the principal dwelling. The staff correctly observes that when comparing an accessory building to the primary structure, the latter is not expected to be an exact duplicate of the primary building. They continue, though, by finding that the, quote, accessory building is a, quote, modern interpretation of the historic structure, and that is not the standard. An interpretation is not similar. It's hard to see how, if the two structures, the primary building facing York Street and this proposed building, were placed side by side, that anyone would call them similar. The staff refers to the narrowness of the main structure, but that would apply to any structure on this lot. Similarly, they refer to the verticality of the windows and the use of a parapet, but the configuration and dimensions of those elements are completely different from the primary building. The visible structures and surfaces of the two structures are also in opposition. The new structure introduces dormers that are absent on the primary structure. Our second concern is our old friend visual compatibility, specifically the requirement that new construction be visually compatible to the contributing buildings to which it is visually related. That means that it must be visually compatible to the contributing buildings and only the contributing buildings, not new buildings, that are within view of the proposed structure and not around the corner or on the other side of the historic district. This structure would tower over the contributing buildings on the lane. It's clearly not visually compatible with their height. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. I think this one is Artis Wood.
Hello, my name is Artis Wood. Staff, more and more, I'm having trouble understanding your recommendations for inappropriate designs. It seems as if you bend over backwards trying to fit 15-inch cakes into 10-inch pans. Your charge is to protect the very precious and desirable historic Savannah districts, not cherry pick our codes to accommodate applicants whose proposals would dilute and destroy their value. Consider this request before you today. I quote from your mandate, encourage contemporary designs that protect and complement existing contributing resources, end quote. Understand contemporary means present, not modern. In fact, many urban architects today favor modifying cold brutalist designs to look more classical. And if proposals such as this one complement surrounding buildings, I recommend some new glasses. You say that refuge can be contained in a one-car garage, which it is required to have. However, this property requires two cans for each living unit. How can you conclude that four garbage containers or even two can be kept within a garage that also holds a car? I don't think it works. Finally, you tell us that the building is an acceptable mass, claiming that the ridgeline is only 3 feet 7 inches higher than the neighboring carriage house, but that ignores the fact that the eaves line on the lane is also equivalently higher and the dormer higher again. So this alters the entire continuity of lane structures and enables the bloated volume to stick up like a sore thumb. I remind you, both staff and commission, that you must judge proposals that come before you not as obstacles to help an applicant overcome, but requirements to be met as stated in our code. Thank you.
Thank you. Anna Wright.
Hello, I'm Anna Wright. Do you have the Eve reference drawing you could bring up that he has? What I wanted to point out is that there's absolutely no reason why the Eve could not be dropped 4 feet to align with the existing carriage houses. It's just void behind that. It's a 15-foot ceiling or something behind it. So there's absolutely no need for all of this glass and everything else. It's not that would not prevent them from having an ADU there. Also, the stairs take up a good substantial part of the main floor and the walkway to get to them. And if you simply didn't have a mezzanine, you would still have an adequate ADU, or have a smaller attic and have a pull-down ladder, which would work as well. But it's not like it's this or nothing else. And then in terms of the argument about the garage and the variance, the existing parking space is only 15 feet wide, but their garage is 10 feet wide, and all that's needed for a carport is the 10 feet. So it's ridiculous to say that if they put a garage up, that would be the full 15 feet, or they put up a carport. It's just confusing everybody, because, of course, you'd have the alley. And then the other thing is that you can see that little gate there is the only way to access the owner's flat, which is the upstairs of the main house. They've already subdivided this house into a ground floor ADU or STVR or whatever, and it's alphabet soup these days in Savannah. The house has been violated. I mean, it's not allowed to function the way it was designed. There's no way in and out of the upstairs except through that little gate there on the lane. And that is a violation of the fire access. I mean, it's also, once you get through that, you have a wooden fire stairs going up with winders. And if the architect can't even get that right, I'm somewhat worried about everything else. And also, I mean, they stick the little edges on the either side of the house. They bring them out 4 inches unnecessarily.
That's right, if you'll wrap up your comments.
it throws the building back. Well, we're fighting for inches here. Why on earth would they make that articulation, which does not conform to the criteria?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Jerome Elder. Well, first, I want to thank the public for coming out because we do understand and we've been hearing a lot of the concerns. One of the things that I wanted to clarify, and I can start with, for example, the question on the eaves. We have actually, the eave that we do have, and I'll just use this for example, we are within the average eaves, with the exception of there's only one that has a lower eave in the two-story carriage houses, which is 16 foot 7. All others are between 18 to 20 feet, 19, 18.3, 19.4. And the parapets for most of these are somewhere between 22.6 to 24.6. When we talk about the massing of the building, I think the three-dimensional view that was submitted is a little deceiving in that it does read extremely large because of the angle of the view. However, as can be seen in these, it's actually more along the line of the massing of any of the other carriage houses. As per the question on the ordinance and visual compatibility with it being visually different in design. In the ordinance itself, so there is the ADU, which is part of the zoning ordinance, but then also when you have any historic design ordinance, well, overlay on it, we have to also consider that. And in it, it states that new additions, exterior alterations, or related new construction, per Mr. Thompson's reference earlier on, that new work shall be differentiated from the old, compatible with the massing size and scale, and architectural features, and it also have architectural features that are different from the historic property. In order to help protect the historic integrity of the property and its environment. To the zoning question, again, the current carport, if we were to cover it, would be over. There are adjustments that can be made in width, but that would not allow for an entryway into the garage. So that's why it is as wide, so that we can have that pathway along the side. And my hope is that if you all would like us to continue to make adjustments, that you do. But we do believe that this application is what we think would be a good contribution. And it does fit within the scale, and we do agree with staff recommendations. Staff has spent a lot of time going through this ordinance and making recommendations, not opinions, on based on the ordinance, on what exactly we have designed and reviewed. We've worked back and forth with them quite a bit. They've put in a lot of time, and we've definitely, I believe, addressed the majority of items in the ordinance. And per Mr. Coleman, we'll ensure that it is within the mezzanine. And as Kelly mentioned earlier, the city planning and review for permits will also have to review it as a mezzanine. And if we don't meet that, they won't allow us to do it. So either way, we have to adjust that floor space. But within the volume, as I said, we believe we're within it, but if we're close, we'll adjust it as well.
Thank you, Mr. Elder. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you. Thank you. So I wanted to start off with reviewing the variance request. I took the time to look back at the Sanborn maps from this tithing block, or the two tithing blocks that serve this ward. There's a wall of continuity along either side of the lane where carriage houses once existed or continue to exist. I feel that since the proposed footprint is the necessary minimum footprint for a carriage house to house a car, and it is maintaining the layout for the courtyard, I agree with staff's recommendations that they meet the criteria for the variance request, given that this would allow the continuity of the lane structures to be consistent. I also took the time to look at Sages to see how many other properties are downtown that have such narrow lots. There's not so many, but generally most of these properties are accompanied with a sister property, just like this property is accompanied with 217 East York. And typologically, many of these properties would share a single volume carriage house at the rear of their property. So I feel that a carriage house would not be outside of the norm typologically for the lane configuration, and to deprive them of that would not be consistent with the traditional layout of the lanes. And then next on to visual compatibility, I did find that the roof shape featured with the dormer is not consistent with what is typical for the ward, Anson Ward. The applicant references photos from the Christian Camphor Cottage, which I feel like is not a good precedent considering that was one of the oldest buildings in Savannah and is kind of an outlier for that area. So I do not find the dormer visually compatible for the roof shape. As for the proportion of the openings and the rhythms of solids to voids in the front facades, it says, the ordinance says, the relationship of solids to voids in the facades visible from the public right away shall be visibly compatible to the contributing buildings and structures to which it's visually related. The proposed facade features about 50% of its facade has transparent openings. The adjacent structures, the transparency is significantly less than that. So I do not find that this proposed change meets that standard. And going on to the design standards, I also found that the proposed use of the wood siding not consistent with the design standards. The ordinance says that wood or fiber cement siding shall be permitted on townhouses only in wards where wood-sided townhouses already exist, or where more than 75% of the lot frontage in the ward contains wood-sided buildings. I did not, I surveyed the ward. It seems that this ward almost entirely contains brick or stucco facades, so I do not find the proposed use of wood siding visually compatible for this project. And then for the dormer, with adjusted design proposal from staff concerning the eaves, the proposed wall at the dormer would become aluminum siding, which is a prohibitive material. So that would not meet the design standards. Overall, though, this was an improvement from the previous application, and I think that there's still some work to be done to massage it to make sure that it's most visually compatible. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Thompson?
Well, that was a very detailed and educational overview. I really just have – I happen to agree with you about, I guess, what I would call the second – tier of windows and that part of the roof line that truly, I think, makes it stand out where it doesn't need to if it just had the other windows maybe a little bit different size. And I would I'm sort of catching up here after being somewhere else for a while. Could I see the staff recommendations on the screen? And I just want to look at it while others are talking. So that's my comment right now.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson, and welcome back. Ms. Woodfield.
thank you. I do appreciate your detailed reasoning, and I agree, I think, wholeheartedly with all of them. I do find that the composite of this is not visually compatible with its situation in reference to its existing historic building and the historic carriage houses that it's aligned with. I do think the buildings and the fact that it's trying to be an apartment in a place where there's really a lane, a service lane with cars and small windows, and this is trying to do large windows and celebrate view and openness. It's not compatible with really the situation and the contributing buildings around it. I do have a question. This is the third time we've seen this, whether the changes that we're seeing are, you know, leading in the right direction, or they're just massaging little bits but still holding on to the key premise of where they've started. You know, I guess you could call it this contemporary modern building in what is a historic district, and whether they can or will get there, and if we should just continue, you know, to do this incrementally when I think the overwhelming discussion points have been from this board, you know, pretty clearly that this is not compatible and it needs some serious reworking and not some tweaking. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Rowan?
I'll keep my comments short since we've been talking about this for over an hour. I agree what's been stated previously by the other board members. And as I said in the last meeting, I just don't think that this structure is visually compatible in this area with the existing carriage houses. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Nagel?
I'll just try to hit point by point and then just nutshell it. I wish it was short, but I think it's hard to make this short when it is so far beyond our standards that it is hard. I respect Mr. Elder very much. I know he's done some great work in the city, and it's an issue of Mr. Highland, Ms. Wood pointed it out very well and eloquently. I think that our job as a board is not to try and make it work and try to see how we can sort of excuse the windows and the height and the mass and the mezzanine and the variances and give two variances to try and make this work, when really our job is just to look at the ordinances and apply them equally for all applicants. Whether we believe Savannah should have more contemporary things or not, I think that is irrelevant here. We do have design standards, and that's the point of this board. I think that we're not meeting the standards, the criteria for the variances, number one. And I think that's a black and white issue. We don't meet it. We can't meet some. We have to meet all. And I don't think we meet the criteria for the variances to be granted. In terms of the visual compatibility, I think that's the elephant in the room. That's no longer the elephant in the room. 235 opinions, third time heard. A lot of the people in this room are the same people over and over who are not willing to give up on something that is definitely not fitting our visual compatibility. I think to Mr. Thompson's prior comment on, well, we should make things look different, so not to confuse our historic structures. The ordinance states that it needs to be visually compatible to the contributing building in similar style to its primary structure. Doesn't have to be a copy of it, and we're not trying to confuse anybody historically, but going from an Italianate to this is a far stretch of just something that is not at all in any realm of the original structure to which it is a part of. So I think on the visual compatibility alone, it is just so far out. I don't mean to say that the design itself isn't good or doesn't fit somewhere else. It could be great, but it's just not meeting our standards, simply put. I think it creates a precedent because if we think about it in terms of the lot, let's say we say yes to the variances. The lot to its left is also 15 feet. This means that tomorrow the owner to the lot to the left can come and say, hey, you granted this guy two variances because they have a 15-foot lot. Now, who are we to say, well, we're not going to give it to you? So it could just keep going. Anybody who has a 15-foot lot can come back and say, hey, board, you gave these people two variances based on the same lot that I have. It would not be fair to deny it to others. Therefore, it would create a precedent that I don't think we should create here. And finally, I think that if we just focus on the design standards, saying that new construction must be visually compatible in height, scale, and massing with contributing structures in its immediate context, not other things that we think should be there, then this proposal just simply fails our standards. And again, with all due respect to the architect, who I do respect very much, I just think this is a stretch. Even as a new proposal, it is still too similar to what we've heard twice already, and it cannot be any different in my point of view. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
Yes, I think Ms. Hamer's summary was an excellent summation of where I think I stand on this as well. I also want to say that we're, as a board, take a recommendation from staff, and everyone on this dais has their own ability to interpret what's in front of them. And just because the staff makes a recommendation, we do consider things independently as persons on this board. And I want that understood by the public, that is not taken lightly. So it's not a popularity contest on how many letters we get from anyone. It's after we do our deliberation, we make a decision based on the ordinance and our own interpretation of that information. Not to ignore it, but it is taken into consideration with everything else that's here. So I want that to be on the record that, you know, we really do take these projects under intense consideration and don't take any decision made by this board lightly. But I do feel that I agree with Ms. Hamer and that this project needs some further work.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Helms?
I have a couple comments. One, based on the sandboard maps, there has never been a carriage house on 217, 219. It's always been empty. And therefore, this is something brand new. There's no historical precedent for any carriage house or ADU on the property. I think Ms. Hamer did a great job summarizing the issues. I think Mrs. Nagel did a great job summarizing the problems. From my perspective, the changes that have been made here are relatively minimal. We are essentially talking about a different shade of lipstick on this particular pig that we've talked about twice before. So from my point of view, I see nothing that suggests to me that I should change my opinion of the project. If this is a pretty good-looking building, but it would be a good-looking building someplace completely different from where it's proposed to be put. And that should, given our ordinances, we are required to look at the ordinances and not whether the building is attractive and might fit nicely in a modern part of town. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. I'll go around one more time. Ms. Hamer?
No further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Thompson?
The comment I have is I tend to agree with everybody, but I do have a comment to make about the variances on that. Downtown and a lot of other areas of the city have some very small lots. And in order to make productive use of those lots, sometimes variances have to be approved. And we can make the decision about this later, apparently, because I suspect this is going to be a recommendation to continue or such motion. But I just want to put my two cents worth in that going from 75% to 80% and so on. And a lot of these lots is perfectly justified, but I'm on the board with the board on these other comments. So
thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield.
No further comments, please.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Rowan.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm not opposed to the variance. It's just the compatibility.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Nagel.
No further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman.
I also agree with Mr. Thompson. I've worked on projects on lots of this size in the historic district, and they are difficult. So the variance to me is reasonable, but I stand on the other part of the comments on compatibility.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Helms.
No real issue on variances, especially to the extent that they were outside the historic district, which is not our purview. But I have no further comment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. At this time, I will open the floor for a motion.
Helms. I move that the Historic District Board of Review deny the petition for 219 East York Street, 25-004198-COA, based on the incompatibility of the project with the visual compatibility and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. The motion on the floor is to deny the petition based on incompatibility of the visual design standards in the historic district. Is there a second?
Woodfield, a second.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Nay.
Mr. Thompson?
Can I have a clarification on the motion?
The motion is to deny the petition.
Deny versus continue. I'm going to say nay.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Nay.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Nay.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
That motion fails. So I will open the floor up for a new motion.
Clarification, it's 4-4, no?
No, 4-3. Hamer, nay. Thompson, nay. Rowan, nay. Coleman, nay.
Mr. Woodfield. Thompson voted aye.
No, he didn't. He voted nay.
Oh, misheard.
Again, I'll open the floor for a new motion.
Hamer, I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review continue the petition of J. Elder Studio and Martin Renezegui for new construction accessory buildings part 1 and 2 and until the next meeting due to incompatibility with the ordinance for visual compatibility and it does not meet the design standards. And then I make a motion to approve the variance request.
Just point of clarification on the motion. We can continue part of the approve the variance and continue part 1 and 2.
Yes, you can do that. And you need to have a date certain. So the date for
October
the next meeting is going to be October the 8th.
Okay.
Just for the record. So yes, you can make a recommendation to approve the variance, but continue parts 1 and 2 since it's a multiple things in one application.
I can summarize it if you want to tell me if it accurately corrects you. So the motion on the floor is to approve the variance and continue the part 1 and 2 to allow the applicant to work on the design to make it more visually compatible to meet the design standards in the ordinance. Okay. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Nay.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Nay.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Nay.
All right, the ayes have it. That motion is approved.
May I make a clarification? If we're approving the variance, are we approving it at the current percentage? I would not like to think that it's an open number, that the new proposal would be a larger variance, that it's restricted to what has been shown to us at this time, because the last time it was smaller, it's gotten larger. I think we need to cap that it's not an unrestricted variance.
That's a good point. Melanie, how do we address that?
You would approve, if you're okay with the percentage that it is today, which is what is before you, then you would approve it based on the percentage that you have today. It cannot get larger. If they want to come back with something smaller, that's okay. And then they have to come back with new designs on the October the 8th, and you can say that's the final continuance. So they either come back with new standards that you think are visually compatible on that date, or that's it, because it's been continued a number of times.
So is that covered in the current motion, or does the motion need to be amended to include that language, or can it be noted?
Madam Chair, or point of order, I think it's implied that approving the variances are on the agenda the way they're presented. So the 80% and the, I guess 40% are in written agenda and referenced as the variances. So,
yeah.
So that's my.
In the design that they present, we'll have to follow those. So technically we would have the ability to approve it again. Okay. Is everyone comfortable with that standing? If not, speak. Okay. We're going to move on to the next item on the regular agenda. This is the petition of Rose Architects, file number 25-003528, COA for 118 West Harris Street in addition.
Afternoon. This is Kelly again. So the applicant is requesting approval of a rear addition at 118 West Harris Street. The proposed work will include the demolition of an existing non-historic addition. As y'all may remember, this project was heard at last month's HDBR meeting. Staff recommended approval of select conditions. The board, however, voted to continue the project to give the applicant time to review and revise the plans with suggestions to revise the wall and the overall height of the addition. The applicant has revised the plan and provided them to the board for a review. Since the previous meeting, the elevator element has been relocated to be on the rear of the home, seen right here. The new elevator is about 3 stories tall. Placing this portion of the addition on the rear will not negatively impact the historic character of the building, as this portion of the home has already been greatly altered due to the current addition. The remainder of the addition, as you can see, will be 2 stories. Applicant previously proposed a three-story addition with a two-story hallway, so they have brought it down in size. The hallway portion will be connected to the three-story addition. Again, the hallway is 2 stories. By doing this, the main massing of the addition is pulled off of the historic structure and is differentiated from the main home. Staff find a couple of examples of this in the nearby areas. The addresses are provided in the staff report for reference. So the portion of the addition that's abutting the length of this portion right here is 24 feet tall and it's 2 stories instead of the previously proposed 3 stories. Both this and the hallway will be made of stucco as historic wall materials and will have more traditional window openings. Staff finds that this portion of the addition, along with the hallway, to be visually compatible and to meet the standards. The applicant is proposing a trellis type element on the rear of the structure. There's also a shutter type element that will partially enclose this area. For From the street, this reads as a porch, not so much a trellis. There are multiple homes in the area with larger rear-facing porches. One right here is immediately across the lane. And this structure is about a block away. It's also on the corner. This structure also has an element on the first floor with a lower level, does not read as a traditional porch-type element. With the shutters, this is a common kind of tactic to help provide privacy for the porch without fully enclosing it. And again, this is seen throughout the district as well. The main thing that staff was concerned about was the work that would be taking place on the rear of the historic home. With the moving of the hallway over to the western portion of the lot, the second story will now be visible from the lane. The plans do seem to indicate that work will take place on the rear elevation, but the exact scope of work is unclear at this time. So staff just asked that the applicant verify what is happening back there. Also, just another very minor thing is the applicant is proposing kind of what we refer to as blind windows right here on the west elevation of the connector piece. Those are, they look like window openings, but do not have windows in them, so kind of faux windows. It will be minimally visible from Bardner Street, but barely, and it's highly obscured. So staff in this case finds that to be visually compatible and to meet the standards as well. So with that, staff does recommend approval of the rear addition at 118 West Harris Street with the condition that the information be provided about that rear elevation, just trying to work that's taking place. So with that, does the board have any questions, concerns?
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
Applicant is here as well, so.
All right, thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hello, my name is Kevin Rose. I'd like to thank you for all coming out for my birthday. You know, good birthday. Seeing all of you, it's great to see you. Welcome back. You behind the presentation?
There we are. Kind of for me today, so.
Okay. I'm going to start out by correcting something that we found in between our submittal and today's date. Kelly was discussing the false windows. I just want to let everyone know that there is an addition on the building next door that we couldn't see that until we got on Google Earth and stood on a ladder and looked down the property line, that there is an addition, which you can see right here, which straddles the two-story addition, the property line. We didn't know it was there because we have an addition there now. So that's something new. I just, sorry to correct you. You've done so much research on this. It's appreciated. So, you know, for those of you that weren't here last time, Shedrick and Tom, the owners would like to turn this into a single family home again. There's currently an apartment in the bottom, and they will be using that for their extended family, grandchildren, children to come visit, so that it won't be a rental. So they are bringing this back. We're taking off the 80s/90s addition, which it's in pretty rough shape. It's actually pretty nasty if you look at it from a construction standpoint. So we'll be exposing roughly 65% to 66% of the existing historic facade. I'd like to thank staff for going through the ordinance and the design standards. And as far as I can tell, we've met all 60-something of them. So that is what we're here to talk about, right, design standards. I'm going to jump in and address board comments from last time. I believe Woodfield, Hamer, and Nagel were talking about height. Some of that was also related to mass. And we've taken the third story off except for the elevator addition, which the elevator addition being next to the primary structure, the Secretary of Interior Standards recommends that location. So we're taking their lead on that and placing it there, which allows the rest of the property to be two stories in nature. It also allowed us to have a more formal and less jumbled massing as well, so that our design, although it's slightly taller than the non-conforming, non-contributing carriage house next door, our addition is slightly taller because we're actually trying to use the golden section rather than developers' window standards, which is, you know, obviously important to architects and the public, hopefully, as well. So the next big jump was basically flipping the connector. Originally, when it was on the other side, it was obviously more exposed. It was, you know, visible from the lane and a little bit from Liberty Street if you really squinted and, like, really were paying attention. So by flipping it, what we've actually done is we've taken our connecting addition and put it where the existing addition is. And so we're filling in a small amount of area, which I can show you here on this drawing. This is the existing conditions right here. You can see this is the existing addition, which also has a terrace on it. This is our new elevator addition. This is the neighboring building's two-story addition that basically takes up this. So we are basically infilling this little section right here. So the neighbors turn their back on us. We're basically putting our wall up next to that. So that's a two-story addition. It's not uncommon. We found, let's see. Is it possible to zoom? I'll get there. All right. This row of carriage houses and connected buildings is on the very next street to the east. And you can see here, can't see it because there's obviously a row of carriage houses, but here is one of the connectors just on the very next block from ours on 20 West Harris Lane. So we feel that by moving the wall placement that we're not negatively impacting the neighbors like we were with the other version. So we definitely took I guess Nagel, Woodfield, and Helms's lead on that. And so that was our solution. I want to get now to the conditions and clarifications. So we're going to be working with Ethos Preservation on the main house. We're not contracted to do the rear of the house yet. We're trying to do this addition. Now that this has been exposed, we're looking at basically replicating what is next door, because this is a sister house to the one next door. It had basically two houses with most likely a porch on both of them. There's a later building in between to the east, which is, you know, obviously, so if you look here, we're going to be replicating this house's fenestration because it's obviously was removed when that 80s or 90s addition was done, and we'd like to put it back. We're working, it's a tax credit project. In 39 years, I've got 100% approval with the National Park Service. So we feel very confident that this is all gonna fly. And so I guess in summation here, any questions? Because this is what we have.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Are there questions for the applicant?
Woodfield, could you explain, I think I understand it, but just I think so everyone's sort of clearer about what this, what would have been the carriage house garage, now you're showing as a trellis wall and then a porch on top of it. So if you could sort of show us some drawings and talk about what your intention is there, that would
yes.
be helpful.
So the idea here is line of visual continuity for the lane. We were working on the addition, and as we worked through it, we noticed that if we could build the fence to enclose the garage, the trash, the HVAC equipment, all those things no one wants to see. By doing the fence with the porch or terrace or whatever we want to call it over it, that line of continuity was maintained for the lane, so that if somebody did build a carriage house next door, that line of continuity would be back and matching with a neighboring house. So with doing that, we had it open. We took Helms's lead on his London privacy concept, which he brought up at the last meeting. So by basically taking some cues from the sister building of this with the kind of summer porch on the side, then we brought that around to this side. And it seemed to really make sense as far as the line of compatibility, as far as that line. We used the same proportion windows, stucco to match. As far as visual compatibility is concerned, we're doing a different material scoring on the stucco because it is important to delineate the old from the new and not have a false sense of history here. So the idea here is that this is a respectful, well-proportioned by the golden section addition. This is not a carriage house. This is an addition. It's not an ADU. This is part of the residence homes. And Ted and Felicia are going to make this their forever home. So we'd like it to be the best it can be.
Helms, I'd just like to comment that I think most of the changes that you made, I like. I mean, I like moving the elevator to the main house. I like flipping the location of the connection. I would like Mr. Elder to do as much different as you did compared to the last time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Helms.
Woodfield. So I just want to, again, be real clear. How deep is this, what you're calling a covered porch? It's open above, right? So you're claiming it as open space.
Yes.
And how deep is it from the lane, please?
How deep is it from the lane? Okay, the actual depth of it. Let me see if I can find the dimension on here. It's technically 9'9".
And you, again, you're claiming that space is open space.
Yes.
The space above the...
Yes, it's a trellis.
Okay.
We're well aware of the ordinance and lot coverage and definitions. Yes.
Okay. And then the rest of your lot coverage is in the courtyard, your open space?
Open space, yes.
And what is your lot coverage, please?
I need new glasses, so just pardon me for this. It's on here somewhere. 74.8 or 9, I believe.
Thank you.
There are additional questions for the applicant? Ms. Hamer?
Hamer, I was just wanting to know, it seems that you carried over that light well from the previous application. However, the opening seems to have enlarged significantly on that west or east wall. So that there's not like a double story opening into that facade. I was wondering what the logic was for maintaining that light well.
Number one, we didn't want to come in front of you and ask for a variance on lot coverage. So we're not asking for any variances or special exceptions. By doing this light well and framing it with walls, we're accomplishing a few things. One is maintaining the full lot with zero lot lines by creating these walls, But then we're getting some of our open space within this light well for drainage and everything else. And another thing that does is it breaks up the facade and also allows us to get glazing that is not on a property line, because we all know that we can't put glass in on the property line. So this kind of served as a way to soften the facade, get our lot coverage, and allow some light into the space and to not turn our back on the neighbor as far as having a big blank wall there. So that was our design consideration there.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Rose.
Thank you.
We have a number of public comment cards. Same rules as before. Please state your name for the record and keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. I will give you a warning when you're about 20 seconds away from getting gonged. First up is, I'm going to butcher this last name, but Ray, if you're here.
Yes, Ray Massarelli.
Massarelli, thank you.
I live at 120 West Harris, so I share a parting wall with the 118. And I want to correct something. There's been a claim that the current addition is 80s or 90s. That's completely untrue. In your record, you'll find sandboard maps that show that that addition was built in 1953. The 73 map shows it was. The 73 map shows that it was there. The SIGs owned that property for 80 years, three generations. I was neighbors with two of the generations. I know when that was built because it was built to accommodate a growing family in the 50s. So the claim that they're not demolishing the historic structure is false. I don't recognize the architectural style of the proposal, but it certainly doesn't resemble the contributing property or the neighborhood. For example, the rear porch and garage really looks like something that would be more on Tybee Island or out on the islands than would be in downtown Savannah. The fenestration of the doors and windows aren't compatible with anything on the property on my house or any house in the neighborhood. There's no house in my neighborhood that runs from the street to the lane. And I know through creative math you can come up with some way to state that there's only 75% lot coverage. But the reality is when you look at it, it looks like one big giant building from the street to the lane. And that's just not compatible with what's going on in Pulaski Ward or my house, for example. The other thing is it's tall. It's large. They have acknowledged it exceeds the height of my carriage house. And, you know, they claim it's only two stories, but they want to put a terrace on top of it that, again, is not something that you typically see in a contributing property, which really invades the privacy of everybody on the block. I'm going to be in my backyard, and up there down, looking down on top of me and on the neighbor to the other side, we're going to basically have a third floor living area where people can go out there and do whatever they want, eat dinner, party, or whatever. So in my opinion, not only does it impact me, it impacts my neighborhood because it's out of character historically. It mutilates really the original, north elevation. It doesn't do anything to contribute to it. There was a mention that, you know, my house has a two-story addition.
Do you want to start to wrap up your comments?
I have a two-story addition. It's historical. It's 8x15. It's not the size of this addition. And, you know, finally, I would like to know there's a brick fence that divides our properties right now. And if they're going to build to that brick fence, how are they going to stucco it? How are they going to frame it? How are they going to paint it? They're going to tear down my brick fence to get to it? Because I'm not going to allow them to do that. And I think
Mr. Massarelli, I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
Good afternoon. Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I think we first of all have some factual issues here that need to be clarified. The architect said that number 120, the building next door, was built through the entire lot. The owner is here telling us that it's not. I also just looked at the Board of Assessor Chatham County records where you can see aerial views, and it does not look like it's built through. So that those facts need to be clarified. It's important that you treat like applicants alike, and I would note that what we've got here is a pair of townhouses. You can see at the bottom picture there they are, the view from Liberty Street. And this elevator disrupts the pairing of the houses. And we had something similar with 422 East Charlton, where an exterior elevator shaft was put onto a set of matching houses, and you turned it down. So I believe that you should apply the same concept here. This is a pair of houses, and this disrupts the pair. In the last meeting, we talked about the National Park Service and their guidance about not building out to the lane. They said the greatest culprit, this is of all the threats they cite, the greatest culprit has been those additions which connect street-facing residences with their associated carriage houses. Well, here, there's no carriage house. They're building it effectively and doing the same thing. Here's the good example, house, courtyard, carriage house. Here's the bad example, which is like what we're seeing here. I went last time, I believe, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, that the architect said there was no view shed. Well, this is the view shed from Barnard, and I can see all the way through, and I can see through to Green. I went there. I looked at the site. There it is. You can see all the way through, and I think those are some of the additions in the back. But on the left, you can see all the way through. So we've got some factual issues. The architect says this doesn't exist. The architect says the house next door is through the lot. The owner says not. So you should certainly get those things clarified. But I think you are running very much against the National Park Service and basic visual compatibility guidelines, rhythm of structures. The relationship of a building or structure to the open space between it and adjacent buildings or structures shall be visually compatible with the open spaces between contributing buildings and structures to which is visually related. And this just isn't. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ralph Anderson.
Hello, I'm Ralph Anderson. I also live on Hare Street. I'm opposed to the addition because it goes from the back of the house all the way to the lane. It's making it appear that it goes from Harris Street all the way to Liberty Lane. I was not aware of any other houses that were allowed to do that downtown. Mr. Rose mentioned one, but anyway, I don't think it's visually compatible. Like I said, I also live on Harris Street. I have a 15-bedroom STVR next to me, and I would love to be able to put up a 2.5-story wall on the side of my house. But so I think it's opening a can of worms. Once you allow one, that you're setting a precedence. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Edwards.
I'm Steve Edwards and I represent the DNA. We just generally agree with the comments that have already been made. We're concerned about the interference with the view shed and the compression of the lot.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Ms. Wood? Ms. Wright?
Anna Habersham Wright. I live very nearby. It's, again, like the last one, it's just unnecessarily awful. You could, within the standard arrangement of this house with a carriage house, with possibly a one-story connection, with a kitchen in the basement, you could accomplish everything you want to accomplish and respect the neighbors and not jeopardize the historic district. This bizarre contraption on the back where they're comparing it. I mean, I appreciate that the first one completely ignored the effect on the lane, but to put the image of a carriage house or something made out of sticks to imitate the lines of a brick carriage house and then call it a sleeping porch with the ridiculous notion that you could have a sleeping porch without a roof, and then the whole thing is kind of a a sleight of hand to try to claim that you actually are within the area is disturbing. It's also disturbing, though, that in the previous discussion that you all gave a generic approval of a 80% lot coverage, and you can see how that immediately comes up here. Well, why can't they have an 80% lot coverage? And if you do not address the individual applications and each issue of the individual applications and give these carte blanche decisions, then the city is doomed and our national landmark status is destroyed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Absolutely.
Just restate your name for the record, please.
Hello.
My name is Kevin Rose, and I'd like to start out by correcting Mr. Jones and say that I didn't say that the neighboring property went all the way through, that it did have an addition that went most of the way. There's about an 8-foot gap between the buildings, so I want to be on record for that. The next thing I'd like to talk about is nuance. And as someone that's practiced preservation and architecture here, I believe that, like the staff and some members of the board, have a greater understanding of what the Secretary of the Interior standards, our ordinances, and our standards mean. And I've heard a lot of opinion, which is not what we're here to talk about. Personal preference is what we basically heard at the beginning of this meeting. I'm going to read a paragraph that Mr. Jones went ahead and copied for me. And just so everyone knows that wasn't here, this report was developed in the office that I was the design director in. We talked about this whole process every day while this was being done. So I'm very aware of what is in this and the nuance of it, not just how I can, in a lawyerly way, pick and choose parts to like address here. The big conversation was large-scale developments, things like the bathroom tile buildings, the law offices, the hotels, and other things. That was the daily conversation. This, let's see if I can find it in here. Anyways, list right here. So the through lane, I can't find it because obviously it's Andrew's, but it states that the biggest culprit are for the ends of the block that face the north and south running streets. That is the biggest culprit. This is a mid-block condition. Yeah, it's semantics, and I hear the peanut gallery back there like whispering and giggling. This is the nuance that we're here to talk about. It's not about opinion. It's 100% about our ordinance, the ordinance that we have, and personal preference should not be a part of this. I've heard a lot of personal preference from, you know, the neighbors. I do want to address the neighbor directly that we're going to deal with that wall and leave it and figure out a way to make that work. We obviously haven't been able to get into the property and see everything. That has been a huge topic of both sides of the property. When you're dealing with zero lot lines, which I've been doing for 39 years here, you just have to do it, get in there, and make everyone happy. So that will be dealt with. But until we have full access and things like that, we don't know exactly what's going on there, because there is an addition next to it now, which is exactly what we're talking about doing again. I think that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment or testimony will be heard. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
Helms, no real comment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Mr. Coleman?
I have no comment.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Nagel?
I appreciate the architect's efforts in moving the elevator and then, you know, not having it make the biggest, most solid wall of all time that we saw last time. But I will always think that in Savannah, all our ordinances and all our design standards are in place to protect what is our original rhythms and voids in the city. And if we don't respect that, then we're going to a slippery slope of how many people, like the neighbor who doesn't like the Airbnb next door, would he be allowed to build a wall? Because simply if somebody else built from the beginning of the property to the end, where do we draw the difference between a kitchen or just a wall? It is setting a precedent that even though it's not at the end of the block, it does eliminate the see-through that is currently there. I live close by there and I pass by there almost daily. You can still see through it. One person builds in the middle of it. At that point, it's gone. That void in the center of our properties is gone forever. And then the neighbor can do the same and everybody can increase their properties, but there's no more voids and the rhythm is lost with the original plan. So even though the standard might not say you cannot build within a carriage house and a main house, I think our standards all point to the fact that we're trying to preserve that and not lose them. I meant to ask the architect and I didn't, which is fine, but how many times do we see a sleeping porch facing a lane? We see terraces, we see carports, but I don't know that I can think of very many sleeping porches that are sort of enclosed. Yes, it doesn't have a roof, but it has a trellis. Does that trellis face a street? Is it a street or a right of way? Now we're entering muddy waters into saying, well, it's a trellis, but it's not facing a street because those aren't allowed. But it's facing a lane, but is it a right of way? And will he ever roof it? And now we're in a giant sort of conundrum that I think opens the door for other people to do it. And we can't say no. We did 201 West Jones was a good example of that. I mean, there was so much backlash to that project trying to preserve that void. This one just sort of builds a solid property in the middle of it all. And then at what point is it okay? And it's not. It's hard to say. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Rowan?
I just want to make a comment that the elevator that we denied was on Charleston Street. And the back of those homes were facing a main street, which faced the front of other homes. And that's why it was denied. It was not on a lane.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Woodfield?
Thank you. Would you mind putting up the 3D a drawing of the new work? My big fundamental place to start here is that we've taken away the carriage house idea and we've built an addition, proposing to build an addition 9 feet from the lane. That is a big two-story addition. Again, it has a porch on top, terrace on top. But the carriage house is gone, and our first compatibility connection here, visual compatibility to the contributing sources around it, is to other carriage houses here in the public right away. So we don't have a carriage house. We have an addition that's been pushed out, to less than 10 feet from the less than 10 feet from the lane. And then we have a little appendage, which, maybe it will look like a fence with a trellis on top, but it is so unlike anything else that's seen in our lanes. And it feels like it's fragile and not very usable. I agree with Ms. Nagel that, would you want to sit and overlook a lane? And then this is right across from a parking lot, and then you can see Liberty, I believe it is. So it's like an incongruous combination of typical parts, but it's not the fabric of what Savannah is, which is a carriage house on the lane that takes care of your utilities and your cars. And then you have an open space and then you have your building where you would expect the addition. So it kind of, to me, brings this addition to the lane. And that to me is a very dangerous precedent.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson?
I don't have any comments.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Hamer?
So I wanted to start off by saying I believe that this iteration is much more successful in massing and scale than the previous iteration. I find that the elevator addition is compliant, especially now that it's been moved closer away from the lane and is no longer a tower-like structure. It's an addition. And I agree with what Mr. Rose was saying about how the Secretary of Standards does insist that you put elevator additions on the outside of the property. But I do find there's still some areas of that need to be massaged regarding visual compatibility. I struggle with the proposal for the rear porch addition. I feel that it doesn't meet the standards for the walls of continuity. Also struggle with the way that structure meets the lane. I feel like the proportion of openings is not compliant with the typical typology of lane facing structures. And then as for the design standards under the section about roofs, it says that pergolas and roof decks shall not be permitted on the street facade. Technically, I mean, you can get into the semantics of it, but a trellis, a pergola, so it seems like that does not meet the standards for that rear porch addition fronting the lane. And then I guess my other note is just this project is on an interior lot. It's not facing a corner. Party walls are a consequence of living in an urban condition, and that's an unfortunate consequence that things may be built all the way up to the property line. And that's all I have else to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. I'll go around one more time. Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No additional comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
My comment kind of fundamentally gets back to, are we going to try to massage this? Have we given comments? Do we want to continue it? Are we going to deny it? I mean, I think it's out of the visual compatibility box that we need to use to approve a project like this. So it takes some craft, I think, to understand how to move forward with this. That's my perspective. Thank you.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Ms. Hamer?
No further comment.
I'm going to delay opening the floor for a motion to allow Mr. Helms to return.
Helms, no further comment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. I will now open the floor for a motion.
Woodfield, I make a motion that we continue this project to the October 8th meeting, taking into consideration our visual compatibility concerns for Rose Architects at 118 West Harris Street, 25-003528.
The motion on the floor is to continue the application to allow the petitioner to address visual compatibility concerns. Do I have a second?
I'll second. Helms.
Mr. Helms with a second. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Nagel?
Aye.
Rowan?
Nay.
Woodfield?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Hamer.
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is continued to the October 8th meeting. The next item up on the regular agenda is the petition again of Rose Architects, file number 25-004104, for 402 East Broughton Street, non-contributing demolition.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant's requesting approval for the demolition of the non-contributing structure at 402 East Broughton Street. 402 East Broughton Street was built in 1966 and received a new facade in 1985. It's on a corner lot situated at the corner of Broughton and Habersham Streets. The one-story concrete block building has plate glass windows and a cantilevered awning. It housed Southern Motors for several years. This is not listed as a contributing resource, and according to the Georgia Historic Resources Survey Sheet, it does not meet the National Register criteria. So criteria for demolition of a non-contributing building, evaluation is required.
If I may take a point of order, members of the public, if you wish to have conversations, please excuse yourself from the meeting room so we have a clear record. Thank you. Caitlin, continue.
So for demolition of non-contributing buildings, evaluation is required just to ensure that you know, consider it for contributing status if it happens to meet the criteria. So the period is significant. Obviously, it's outside of that. The building was altered in any earlier integrity. It may have had, was compromised in the 1980s renovations. Another criteria are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of history. The site is associated with automobile history that was seen throughout Savannah and beyond. Though there is some local significance, this building, which has undergone various alterations, does not currently hold this level of contribution to the broad patterns of our history, are associated with the lives of significant persons in our past. Southern Motors was established in 1929 by Jerry Kaminsky as a small business on Broughton Street. The property at 402 East Broughton Street housed the business for several years, but the company has expanded to the south side and has not been in this location for several years. To embody the distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, or that represent the work of a master, or that possess high artistic values, or that represent a significant and distinguishable entity whose components may lack individual distinctions. Staff did not find this was met. Have yielded or may be likely to yield information important in historic or prehistory. This is a site which has already experienced significant ground disturbance. You can see on the sandboard starting with 1884. This shows a previous structure on the site with a stone basement. It is not likely to yield archaeological data, specifically with prehistoric. And for exceptional importance, contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside the district's period of significance. These resources possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. The building at 402 East Broughton Street does not meet all of the above criteria for exceptional importance. Therefore, staff finds the building did not meet all of the above criteria required to become a contributing building, and thus it would remain listed as a non-contributing resource. So for conditions, there's the standard conditions staff will have for any type of demolition at the very least. So these are our two, would be document the building as per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to the demolition, and if it's feasible, explore whether the building can be deconstructed rather than traditional demolition and the materials salvaged for reuse where possible. So that would be our recommendation to approve with the aforementioned conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this application? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner like to come forward and say your name for the record?
Hello, everyone. I'm still Kevin Rose. I agree with the staff 100%. I guess it's probably a little less controversial than the last one, although it's much larger.
We agree with the staff's recommendation to document the building. We've already done that. We walked Broughton Street with the new owner and looked at context and things and had lunch and talked about the future of the property. And while we were wrapping that up, we went over and documented everything extensively for city records. I want to go on record and say that the architect that did the design in the 80s was a friend of mine. His name is Barry Rentzel, and he was unfortunately killed in a car accident coming home from Florida. But he was a great architect, and I just want to be on record saying that. I guess just going to open it up to y'all if you have any questions other than that. But the owner did reach out to some folks about salvage and things like that at Repurpose Savannah. And although a lot of the materials I don't think are of any sort of historical merit, they're going to come by and take a look, and we'll enter a phase of selective demolition and then other more invasive demolition after that once we've figured out what we can salvage. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Are there questions for the applicant? Okay, thank you. I don't have any speaker cards. Do we have anyone online?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. Well, at this time, we will enter into board discussion. No further testimony will be heard. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Excuse me, no comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
I know this property very well, and I think it's an attractive, interesting building, but I've also seen that it's very hard to get any use out of the building. They try to put events in there. They try to have art exhibits. It's a very difficult space to rent. I would suggest that you try to incorporate something in the new building, but I know it's impossible. So I understand your dilemma, and I believe you're on the right course. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
No comment.
I'm not going to go around a second time unless you feel very strongly you want to add something. Speak now. I'll open the floor for a motion.
Woodfield, I make a motion that we approve the request for demolition per staff recommendations for Project 402 East Broughton 25-004104 by Rose Architects, because the conditions have been met for a non-contributing demolition, with two conditions: one, that the building is documented per the city of Savannah policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition, and if feasible, to exploring whether anything can be deconstructed and reused.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. The motion on the floor is to approve the request of demolition for a non-contributing structure with the two documented staff recommendations. Do I have a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved. I'm going to take a point of order and have a brief recess before we get into the second part of our agenda. We'll be back in 5 minutes. All right, I'm going to reconvene the meeting, and as a point of order on the agenda, we had one of our petitioners had to step out, and so has requested to be moved to the bottom of the agenda. So item number 8, the petition of Ethos Presentation, Ms. Ellen Harris, I'm going to move that to the bottom of the agenda. Are there any objections to the change? Okay, so we will proceed with item number 9 on the agenda, petition by SHM Architects, file number 25-00. 3992 for 18 East Macon Street.
Good afternoon. My name is Jody Brown. For those of you I have not met, I am the new principal planner with the MPC in Historic. Today I'm presenting 18 East Macon. It was designed as an attached townhome in the Georgian style with federal influences and constructed in 1855. It is listed as a contributing resource within the NHL and the Downtown Historic District. The applicant proposes to construct a partially enclosed porch and roof deck on top of a previous enclosure from 2012. The proposed work would involve the removal of a middle window on the third and fourth floor. In place of each window, an 8-light single French door would be installed to access the addition. The third floor partial enclosure would be supported by 4 hardy board 12-inch square Tuscan columns. Between the columns on the north, east, and west will be a 3-foot high railing. While the north facade will maintain an open railing, the east and west facades will have a solid surface behind the railing and the west facade featuring cabinetry on the inside. The solid surface behind the railing will be finished to match the railing. On top of the railing, east and west sides only, will be a pair, will be 3 pairs of louvered shutters. A half-round gutter will also be added to the second floor roof. The fourth floor will replicate the third floor with 3-foot railings that are supported by 8x8 hardy board newel posts. The railing will be open on all sides. Additionally, at the third floor to the east of the proposed partial porch enclosure, a relocated HVAC compressor is proposed for installation. The applicant proposes to enclose the compressor with louvered screens. Based on staff's review of the project, staff recommends to approve the request for construction of a partially enclosed porch and roof deck at 18 East Macon Street, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you.
Thank you and welcome. Happy first meeting. Are there any questions?
I have a question.
Mr. Thompson.
Are there other buildings that have this kind of configuration on the block or near with the porches like that?
Not that I recall.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Woodfield, please. The roof next to the porch, they're proposing to put a HVAC unit on top of that roof. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do we know kind of what size it is, or it seems a pretty visible place to put a HVAC unit?
The plans did not indicate the size, but the I believe I heard that Jerry Cowart, the architect, is here.
Thank you. I'll ask him.
Any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Jody. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, everybody. Madam Chairman, I'm Jerry Cowart, architect for the Novaks. The question about the HVAC unit, there is presently a 1-story addition on the back of this building that has a compressor mounted on it. The compressor is in the same location where we want to put the porch. So we're going to move the compressor to the left. So it's, if you will, in the first bay of the rear of the house rather than in the center bay. And then we're going to screen it from view from the street. Mr. Thompson, your question about whether there are other similar examples, not on this block, but we found other examples similar to this throughout the city. We did not include those photos, and I don't think staff had any photos.
Happy
to answer any other questions?
Any questions?
Nagel, yes, I do have a question. With that compressor, you're saying it was on top of the addition. I'm trying to locate that where it used to be. So if I'm looking at the photos here, I just don't see it. Is that on the addition of the part that has like the French?
Can we look at this?
Double hung windows or is it just simply wasn't visible from the street before because it was on top of a roof?
It's on top of a roof. What I want is to look at this area right here. So there's a photo around from this side.
Let me pull up the
there is a tree there that blocks it from view.
Okay. So where it was is where you're putting your addition and you're moving it to the side.
So currently there is a one-story addition off the back. Excuse me. It's a one-story addition over the basement elevation, okay? And that one-story addition is about 6 foot deep off of the main building. And that's where the compressor currently sits.
I'm just not seeing it because we do see the one on the ground floor.
Yeah, it's right up.
Can regardless, it doesn't matter because, you know, you could have one there and move it and whatever. But I wanted to know if where you're hanging that compressor off of the back wall, there was currently anything in that same spot. And the answer would be no.
No, and okay. We're not hanging it off the back wall. We'll be mounting it on that roof. Screen
yeah,
around.
That's what we were saying in the pre-meeting. So the one that's there is on the adjacent property. Let me just go back then to the drawings. I'm just trying to understand because it doesn't look like it's going to be on top of any roof. It just looks like it's mounted to the back of the house in your.
Okay. Let me see if I can
in your
clarify
drawings.
That.
It makes a difference because obviously if it's on top of a roof, you don't see it as much from the viewpoint down below or from the street or from the lane. But if it is just mounted at the back of the house, then you kind of really see it.
Okay. So I don't know if you can see this cursor.
Yes.
But that's the location of it.
So it's not on top of a roof.
That is a roof underneath it. That's there's a basement level to this house, then a first story level where we did an addition back in 2012.
Okay.
There was a previous addition that had been done to the back of the house, a shed addition that was above that basement story. And you can see it continues on across the adjacent townhouse.
I see it on the cross section. So on your east elevation, I'm getting a better view of that roof. It's a pitched.
Yes.
It's a sloped roof. Okay. I see it on that east elevation drawing. That isn't the one you're looking at, but I have it on my computer.
Okay.
But you still, you know, you still see it.
What's the question?
The question was, yes, is it hanging in the back of the house? Is there anything currently there? No, it used to be where your addition is going to be. So currently
correct.
There's nothing on that back of the wall other than that roof.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Additional questions for the petitioner?
Hamer, can you please confirm what material you're going to use at the screen for the HVAC compressor?
We will use artificial material that looks like wood. How about that? We'll probably use a hardy material or we'll use some kind of PVC material, but something that we can paint to match the wood on the other part of the addition.
Thank you.
Is it solid? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's going to be louvered. It'll allow air to move through. Oh,
but not pickets. It's not pickets to match the porch.
No, not pickets to match the porch. Not intended to match the porch.
Additional questions for the petitioner?
Yeah, just to clarify, this is Nagel. Are we attaching this bracket to the roof or to the brick of the house?
Not to the brick.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Cowart.
Okay, thank you.
I don't have any public comment cards. Do we have anyone online?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further testimony will be heard. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
I did look at the property and the existing addition, and this appears to be, you know, thoughtfully done and not and visually compatible with the area around it. So no questions, no comments.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
All right. I'm not going to go around a second time, so I will open the floor for a motion.
Nagel.
Ms. Nagel.
I move that the Historic District Board of Review approve the petition of 18 East Macon Street, 25-003992-COA, as the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. The motion on the floor is to approve as requested. Do I have a second? Rowan, second. Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That motion is approved. Next item up on the agenda is item number 10, the petition of Array Design, file number 25-004101, Montgomery Street, new construction, part one.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Rohan Aris. I'm a planner from the MPC. Madam Chair, members of the board, good afternoon. This is an application requesting approval for part one for height and mass for a new construction that is three stories in height. And staff would first like to acknowledge the concerns that have been raised and would like to clarify that the purview that staff works within purely addresses the height and mass in part one of this, and the consideration that any speculation that there might be changes in the street network would be outside of the purview of staff for consideration. And eminent domain does allow the city to handle such developments that might happen, considering that we would like to go ahead looking at this as a regular petition. So what do we know? We know that it is zoned DC, which is establishing that the lot is buildable. And the proposal is a three-story mixed-use development, which has a ground floor as an office that is extending off of the adjacent building. Second and third floors have two units each, residential units, and the second and third floor is set back 10 feet. We can see in the map that the lot is vacant in the Berrien ward, in the ward, and is irregular in shape, and we do see that Berrien Street terminates at the I-16 viaduct. The surroundings are three-story contributing masonry structures, mainly from 1854 and 55. Staff would like to note for the record that nothing has been approved and the lot is zoned and platted for development. Speculative street network changes are beyond scope of part one. We can use the plan and elevations were here to understand in essence what is being proposed. The A, B, C, and D are developed as of today, and the irregular lot at the corner is what is being intended for construction. And the elevation on the right, we can see that the ground floor is abutting the adjacent building, while the second and third floor are 10 feet away. Addressing the height and massing standards for downtown commercial, and starting with coverage, 100% building coverage is allowed, setbacks none required, and the building meets the zero lot line pattern, and the standards are met. Findings for visual compatibility. Height is 3 stories, and the height map allows up to 4 on the designated lot, and it is compatible with the 3-story buildings that are surrounding it. Massing and scale, floor-to-floor heights of it being 12 feet, 9 feet, 9 inches are consistent with the district patterns. Rhythm aligns with the street wall. Entrances are oriented to the street. Generally compatible in terms of solids and void, but detailed fenestrations for part 2. Roof and continuity, a flat roof with a parapet consistent with the commercial forms completes the street frontage. Directional expression being vertical, the character is compatible and the standards are met. And thereby, staff would like to note that the staff recommendation is to approve the part 1 height and mass for the new 3-story mixed-use building in the corner of lot of the 400 block of Montgomery Street because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you. Thank you, and welcome to your first meeting as well. Are there questions for staff? Mr. Thompson?
Yeah, kind of a sidebar question. There's no address on this. Is there, it hasn't been established yet or?
It doesn't have an address because it's never had anything
there before.
Built on it.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought they laid that stuff out in the city. All right, fine. That's, I'm just curious.
Are there any additional questions for staff?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman.
Coleman, I don't believe that the project meets the standards. For a commercial on the first floor, it's supposed to be 14 feet, second floor 12, and then 10 above. We're looking at 12, 9, and 9. Those are significantly off what the requirements are within the zoning. So even though I see there's an attempt to align with the adjacent building, it would have probably been helpful to see how the other buildings of the street relate and whether that trying to meet that 14 foot or whatever would be really visually out of character. But right now, based on just what's being seen here, I don't see where there's a compliance with the ordinance relative to those floor-to-floor heights, which are said to be minimums.
Staff would like to revisit this and confirm this for sure.
Were there additional questions for staff?
Hamer, I just wanted to chime on to what Mr. Coleman said. I believe the ordinance says that it's the exterior expression of the floor-to-floor heights, not the actual floor-to-floor heights. Yeah. So the proposed application would be in compliance with that standard.
I would agree it says that exterior expression, but I don't see that exterior expression meeting it either. So I think that if you can show those dimensions actually doing that externally, then I would withdraw my comments. But right now I don't feel that's applicable here.
Were there additional questions for staff? Okay, thank you. Perhaps staff can review while we hear from the applicant, and then we can revisit during board discussion. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, members of the board. My name is Shauna Casera. I'm the architect on this project, and my client, Jeff Iannone, is also here. I filled out a comment card for him, so he's official. So if you have any questions for either of us, we're both here to answer. And Mr. Coleman, I'm going to answer your question in just a minute, but one brief opening statement here as we are examining the height and mass of this proposed building is that I'd like to point out that we are in a potential four-story building height zone, as Rohan did, and we're proposing three stories. We also are in a maximum allowable lot coverage of 100%, and we are proposing 80% lot coverage. These decisions are based on the sensitivity to the existing block of contributing structures, which we are adjoining at the ground level, all of them built between 1854 and 1855. I'm going to pull up the elevation. Hang on, that's not even my project, is it? Caitlin. Yeah, I think that's, well, that's up here, but then I'm,
I think there's more on the agenda.
Okay, if you can pull up my drawing set, that would be awesome. And go to A4.0. Mr. Coleman, I'm going to just pull up a visual here to address your question, and if we can zoom in on this. Here you see the existing building at 419 Montgomery, the proposed building to the right. The existing building, perfect. To the top of that parapet wall is approximately 30 feet, not including the columns or pilasters that sit on top of the parapet. And my proposed building over here, if you look on the right side where I've noted the ceiling heights and the structure and the floor elevations, but also the exterior expression that I'm attempting to give the building by way of limestone banding. So 14.6 up to this first band, and then up to the second band, 12 feet. And then the third floor having that 10-foot exterior expression and a parapet wall above that. So again, trying to be very sensitive to the contributing structures on this block, continuing the rhythm of the storefront that is existing here as we move along the new building. And that's all I have. I'm here for questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Woodfield, one question, please. We know that there's the flyway behind you, and this can be built with or without the flyway being removed. Is that correct?
That's correct. When I met with Edward Morrow in December, it was Edward, Caitlin, Jonathan Mellon in December of 2024 to discuss the very atypical nature of this site. they directed me that this is a legal non-conforming lot, and that it is platted. It does have a pin. It doesn't have a number on Montgomery Street, but it has a pin with Chatham County, and that this would be by right development, which were the terms that Edward used.
On the rear elevation,
mm-hmm.
You know, I can totally understand why you would keep it minimal expression of windows and detailing. But how far away is this from the flyway?
I think it's the close, one above. And this. I'm going to pull up the, I'm going to go back to the site plan in a minute. But this is the rear of the building right here. It's squirrely because it's a trapezoidal lot. And the flyover is above that first floor of the building. So let me take you back here to some of the photos and to the site plan.
This is standing, okay, so here's our existing building, and here's our proposed, and the flyover is back here. This photograph and this photograph is standing here next to the adjacent building and looking back towards the flyover. You can see that it's a good 15 feet in the air, directly behind the building. There's a very steep slope up to the flyover.
So the flyover is parallel to the back of building A. It's not following the curve of your proposed building?
It is and it isn't. Here's the survey, and let me zoom in a little bit. This is the site. I'm sorry if it's really small, but here's the building, and this, the reason why it is this trapezoidal shape piece of property is because it is parallel with that flyover coming along the back of not the existing, but defining the shape of this proposed lot. Did that answer your question?
I think so. You're saying that flyover is 15 feet away or so from the back of the building?
No, it's farther than that, but it's high.
Yeah.
So it's above the first floor of the building. And Jeff, you could probably describe this if you wanted to know more about that.
Just a general idea, because it's very hard to imagine it in three dimensions.
Behind his existing building, there's a very steep slope up to the flyover that then runs parallel with this proposed lot.
Flyover is actually on ground. It's not elevated.
It's elevated. I'm going to see if I can find a better image here. It is on fill. You are correct. And it's high. This probably gives you the best, if you're standing on the ground level, this is how high the flyover is. This is the guardrail of the flyover.
What I'm trying to kind of get around to understanding is how you should be articulating the back of this building. You know, it is a building. People drive on that flyway. What is the back of the existing building like? Is it just very brick and very plain, few openings?
So here we are looking at the north elevation. This facing the river, this projection here being towards Montgomery Street, and then this angled facade is what's parallel with the flyover. So we do have some fenestration on that. I have intentionally used two window sizes, so the same windows that we're proposing on the more visible sides. Same windows are being used facing the flyover.
And the approach is consistent to the existing buildings. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. Is it, it's not that you're just turning your back on this and it's a blank wall, but that it somehow has some interest and it's consistent with the existing buildings. The back of that. Because we're going to talk about the front, so it's just get the back out of it.
Yes, it's a brick building with the same size windows all the way around. The only other window style and size I have is here in the front of the building. So all other windows that you see are these double hung windows on all sides of the building.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ms. Hamer? Can you please confirm what type of roof is proposed at the one-story connector?
Yes. This will be a flat roof and with a short parapet wall that will allow us to align with a marking on the existing building. but a flat roof that I would like to propose has a large skylight visible from the apartments above, but not from the right of way.
Is the water going to be draining towards the front of the building?
That I have not determined yet. We haven't done civil, and we haven't really gotten into the materials here, but I'm not sure yet.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Thank you. I do have a number of speaker cards. Ray Mascarelli.
Hello again, Ray Mascarelli, 120 West Harris Street.
Can you just enter that into the microphone so it's on record?
Ray Mascarelli, 120 West Harris Street.
Thank you.
So the reason why this parcel doesn't have a street number is because it's being proposed to be built right in the middle of Old Berrien Street. So those streets before I-16 terminated went all the way through to MLK. And what I can't understand is the city has spent, I don't know, several million dollars studying removing the terminus and moving it to the west side. They have plans that shows it wraps around and ends up terminating on Bay Street and opening that whole area up. So why would we be permitting building a structure in the middle of a street when we're trying to, at least ultimately sometime down the road, you know, revitalize that area by removing the terminus, restoring those streets, and redeveloping that area? It just makes absolutely no sense to me. So for those reasons, I'm opposed.
Thank you. Andrew Jones.
Good afternoon. Andrew Jones. Andrew Berrien Jones. John Berrien is my fourth great uncle, was who this street was named after, Attorney General under Andrew Jackson, three-time Georgia Senator, first President of the Georgia Historical Society, and so on. I think we're missing the forest for the trees in this case. The flyover discussion is very interesting, but it's not particularly relevant to what you're addressing here today. And also, your ability to develop a property as of right from a zoning perspective is completely different. You can have the right to build lots of things under zoning laws, but when you come here, the overlay is to be applied, and some of those rights are constricted. Well, in this case, what you have to apply is Section 7810A of the ordinance, Streets and Lanes. And it says very clearly that development shall reconstruct, restore. I don't have the words right in front of you. It's either reconstruct or restore. It's not just preserve, but you've got to put it back. Now, that's obviously a very uncomfortable position for you to take, given how much work they put into this project, but it is the law. That's what you're supposed to do. Do you remember when the police department parking lot on Oglethorpe was sold and a developer in Atlanta had a huge development plan for it? And then it was realized that under 7810A, they had to restore the lane, and they were forced to do that. I think the city had to rebate them something and some money in the $2 million. So maybe it's better to solve this right now, apply the law correctly right now, even though it's very uncomfortable to do so. Because otherwise you could easily come back into that situation, an eminent domain situation where the city pays. And you are supposed to apply that provision. It's a shall provision. Development shall. So I hope you follow the ordinance in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Wright. Did she leave? And I have Jeff Ianone. Okay, thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond to any of the public comment?
Yes. I'm going to read one sentence from the staff report that says consideration of speculative future network changes is beyond the scope of part one height and mass review of the HDBR. We are here looking at whether or not this building is appropriate for this site, a site that has a PIN number that is a lot of record. And as I explored this idea, was told from city officials that this is subject to by right development. We are aware that this was Berrien Street. I've already been through site plan review meeting. There is an 8-foot sanitary sewer line under this street that the city will need to explore to see if it is still operational. We understand there are challenges. What I'm asking you to consider today is that this is a part one height and mass assessment COA application. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
My comments are, I agree with staff's review. However, there are just a few items that I felt like could be improved upon to ensure visual compatibility is met. As far as the proportion of openings, I feel that where awnings are proposed at the first floor, ground floor facade, I feel like it'd be more appropriate to have a transom windows above the entrance doors, in order to relate to the neighboring, storefront configuration of the contributing building next door. And then, one note too is, as far as the design standards go, the proposed balconies protrude further than what is allowed. Residential balconies shall not extend more than 3 feet from the face of the building. The proposed balconies extend almost 4 feet. On the section concerning exterior walls, the ordinance states that lots less than 60 feet in width shall be constructed to form a continuous plane parallel to the street, with the exception of bays and porches. I feel there is a significant number of projections from this facade, and I feel that removing the proposed awnings on the ground floor would help reduce that redundancy, to make it more visually compatible. And I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Thompson.
I think I'm going to stay out of trouble and just say no comment.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield.
Thank you. I realize we're height and mass in your preliminary in your design work here. But there are a couple, I think, issues that you can address maybe in the next coming forward. I don't think the height of the project is too sensitive. I appreciate Mr. Coleman's comments about getting your proportions right and meeting standards. I'm more concerned about two things. We have this row of historic buildings, and then this facade here looks like the whole ground floor of the addition and the connector are just running along and dying into the historic row. And I think it'd be more successful if you would have the main building sort of stand alone and read like a three-story composed continuous structure and then recess in some way and differentiate the connector so that the connector does not kind of give you a vertical base to your building, but it acts as a way to join the existing historic buildings and the new historic buildings. The second thing I believe you need to work on is that this building is at the end of a street. and it will have kind of a symmetry and an importance. It is bigger than the buildings around it. On this row, there's nothing to the right, so it will have a presence here. And I find it disturbing that the presence are the bays that are the little kitchenettes or the dining areas. I think you need to look at a bigger composition where, you know, the balconies are important, the bottom is important, the verticality is important. You know, instead it doesn't hang together quite as well as I think you can do. This, you know, it's important in Savannah that we create good buildings. I think that's what people respond to here. And I think you can make this a more cohesive whole. You might look at the building across the street that has kind of a superstructure of columns and balconies integrated with the columns and features. So they're not kind of individual pieces, but they create a harmonious whole. And I think to bring down and have some vertical element that sits on the ground will also make it a far more attractive and powerful building. And, you know, you've got time to do that. I wouldn't let these little kitchenettes just float, excuse me. I think they're breakfast nooks, but I think you maybe need to bring a column down on each side of them so that they come to the ground and they're not just sort of floating up there as a form, but they reach the ground and terminate into a bigger composition. Thank you.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
I think this is a tough one because we have our purview. And then there's the respect for our city and the original layout of our city. And now, you know, this is one that can be discussed both ways. If I look at it from the perspective of a building meeting the standards, I appreciate Mr. Coleman's comments on the height. That is not something I had caught. In general, I wouldn't be opposed to it, but at the same time, it's currently, if built, then it presents, it disrupts a current throughway, which I know is not within our purview. If the city has not had any plans yet for this to continue being a street, then there's only so much we can do about that and on this board. So I commend the public who brings it up. I would encourage that to be brought up on a city level, but here there's only so much we can say and it has to be about height and mass today. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
Yes. I appreciate the architect's effort to create this illusion of 14 and 12, but adding a band that is clearly not where the floor elements are doesn't work. It's clear that the band's interrupted by the doors, which shows that that's not the floor level. And it's not a trick of the eye that's going to work for me to say that that makes an expression that makes the 12 and 14 work. It does not. It's there, but it's not. It doesn't represent what's being pulled off. And on the issue of the street, I think that the standards have always been worried about what the National Park Service has said about us opening streets. And that's always been one of the major caveats about our maintaining our certification, and the opportunity to open streets back up is something they hold pretty dear. So I think that is something that the city needs to really consider relative to this opportunity because of what's been done with the flyover. And this is the one place where a street would be impacted by not being able to be opened by this development. So while it's not under our purview for height and mass, I think it is under our purview under the whole premise of reviewing projects. So we can't pull one piece out just over this one step because this step leads to the next, excuse me. So my main concern right now is I don't feel it meets the height and mass relative to those stories and the street elevation, the street being open, I think is outside of what I want to raise here, but I think it needs to be considered.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Helms?
I'll back up the comments of Mrs. Nagel and Mr. Coleman that this building is visually compatible with the other buildings. Whether the heights of the floors are right or not, I don't know. But I do think the city needs to think seriously about whether it's prepared to pay $2 million to reinstate the street if this is approved and built, you know, in a manner similar to what they had to do with the parking lot by the police station. And, you know, that's a real money cost that the city is looking right down the barrel of. I mean, certainly if I had the opportunity as a businessman to build a building where eminent domain was likely to be enforced, I would jump at the opportunity because, as I said in the pre-meeting, that's like shooting fish in a barrel. When you've got a building that's built and somebody comes along and says eminent domain, you can value the building very nicely and at a very high level. So that's my problem. Building height and mass, I do not have a particular problem with.
I'm just going to add my comments to this one before we decide on what we want to do for a vote. It is within the board's purview to look at the reconstruction of historic ward patterns of streets and lanes. So that is something that we can consider, not directly part of this application, but part of our higher mission. So that is something to keep in the back of your head as far as evaluating the application as it is before us today. I think the questions for me are substantial enough with the way that the back or side of the building, because of the odd shape of the lot, presents is concerning. I think the floor heights and the presentation and the visual representation is concerning. And I think the addition of balconies and awnings also is concerning. So for me, there's enough to say that it would warrant a continuance, and that would probably allow us time to meet with our people at the city to talk about streets and lanes and our mission to reconstruct where possible. So just my two cents, but I would lend to my capable colleagues, and I'll send it back to you, Ms. Hamer.
Thank you. I would like to add on, I agree with Ms. Woodfield's comment about the massing of the hyphen, the connector piece between the existing building and the proposed building. I feel like that there needs to be some differentiation between that facade and the proposed three-story building. And then I also agree with everyone's take on exploring the Berrien Street further and doing the continuance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Thompson?
Well, I agree with Ms. Woodfield's comment about the hyphen and Mr. Coleman's floor height issue. In terms of the right-of-way issue, unless the city steps in and acquires this property, right, the person has the perfect right to build on it, regardless of what's going on. The situation over by the police station, actually, I was a bidder on that contract for development back when I was in private sector, and the city gave that away. They gave the lane away, even though we told them it was there. And later, when people challenged it, and I was looking for Ellen Harris, was the person that challenged it with me, they paid $2 million to get it back. Now, if they can come up with the money, whatever this property's worth, these folks won't have to build a building, and they can go look for investment somewhere else. But right now, they have a valid lot, a legal lot, and they have a right to build on it unless the city comes in and does something. So I'm not sure it's our purview to deal with that. If it's a lane, that's a different story, I think, because it's got historic. Well, maybe Mr. Berrien sees it as historic too.
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, it's.
I said more than.
It's definitely a question that I would like to have more clarification before making a decision, because it's. I mean, it's pretty clear in the section that's referenced, section 7.8.10A. It reads, development shall preserve or reconstruct the historic ward pattern of streets and lanes within the Oglethorpe plan area. So that it's a little bit gray. So I think that having some clarification, and, you know, certainly don't want to infringe on anyone's rights. Yeah.
And if I may, just so that you know, the city, well, two things happened with that whole area. A number of years ago, the MPO actually did a study of that area. And we've got all the documentation for that. But in addition to that, the city is in the process of looking at doing another study. The challenge that you've got with this is that this is a request for, you know, height and mass. And if the city is interested in taking this back to the original Oglethorpe plan, then they're going to have to make some decisions with regards to how to move forward with this, because it's a legal lot. If it weren't a legal lot, that would be different. And when I say it's a legal lot that's recorded and, you know, has been transferred. If you decide that you want to continue it for 30 days to get some additional instruction, that's within your purview. But I would caution you to kind of try and stay focused on what your lane is with regards to, gosh, not mean to be punny about it, but to focus on what the request is for, because they're going to have to get additional permissions. This isn't the last time that this will come forward with regards to the city and how they deal with issuing permits and some other stuff that they have to go through. This is just kind of like a first step, but be very, very careful about that, because you can't hold somebody's property at bay for 20 years because there's another study or that something else is going on without purchasing it. So maybe that's something that the city could look into, it, you know, at your suggestion, but just be mindful about that. They do have they are in the process of doing another study for that area.
Ms. Woodfield, I'm like, where did I leave off?
Well, I think there's enough questions about the height and mass that it warrants to be continued. I mean, it may not be a huge amount, but I think our comments are valid, and you could incorporate them and come back with this a little better fine-tuned for the height and mass before we approve it, before I would be comfortable approving it.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
I think with the notion of the purview being able to include the restore when possible, this would be a very controversial situation if we didn't, as a board, respect our standards and say, well, we do have to try and restore where possible, and this is right in the middle of a part of the Oglethorpe plan. So that would change my opinion, my prior comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
No additional comment.
Mr. Helms?
Just one, and that is that people keep talking about the fact that there are more bites of the apple, and I wonder whether this board has ever reviewed an approved COA before, and my guess is that it is not.
Madam Chair.
Sure.
I didn't understand it. Can you mind explaining that?
Well, people keep talking about the fact that there are more approvals that need to be required. And my impression of the way that this board operates and the way that the law, in fact, operates is that once this board has approved something, then this board has no further right to have any comment about that property until, you know, even if the facts change or the things change. Once we've given our approval, that's it.
And I don't think that there's ever been a case where the facts have changed that this board has then come back and said, well, actually, that COA we gave a year ago doesn't work. This is the time. This is the one time we have to object to it.
I'm not going to belabor the point, but there definitely have been times where design changes have been made on COAs that have been issued, and it has been brought back before this body. But again, I don't want to belabor that point. If there isn't any further discussion, I'll open the floor for a motion.
Madam Chair? Sorry.
I think there is a time limit on the COAs.
There is.
I think it's 2 years.
Correct.
Yeah, correct.
Ms. Hamer?
One more additional comment on the floor-to-floor heights. If I'm reading the elevation correctly, if they were to follow the standards and do the true floor-to-floor heights of 14 and a half, 12, and 10, then the height of the building would increase, which is, I don't think, what would be preferred, since there is already some concerns about the height of the building. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Is there any further discussion? All right, I'll open the floor for a motion.
Woodfield, this seems to be my day for motions. I make a motion that we continue this project to October 8th. The lot in the corner, lot of 400 block Montgomery Street, 25-004101, array design, new construction height and mass, that we continue the petition because there's some questions about the height and the mass, and also to allow time to have more clarification from the city on the continuance of Berrien Street.
Do you want to add a date?
October 8th.
Thank you. So the motion on the floor is to continue the petition to allow the applicant to address height and mass concerns and visual compatibility factors, and also allow the city to weigh in on the continuation of historic Berrien Street. Do I have a second?
Second, Helms.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Nay.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is continued to the October 8th meeting. The next item up on our regular agenda is the petition of Lynch & Associates, file number 24-004958. For 20 through 24 East Oglethorpe Avenue, new construction, part two, design details. And I would just like a note in the record that our board member, Ms. Hamer, is recusing herself and has filled out the appropriate paperwork to do so. We'll give her a moment.
If I might, Madam Chair, I would just like to say that with the item that you just continued, it will give us an opportunity to talk with the city and get a zoning determination letter.
Sure.
We didn't do that because this is not initially technically within your purview, but because it's something that you've expressed interest about, then we can at least make sure that we get a determination made on that section.
Yeah.
So that
I think
it comes back to you.
With the zoning clarification, also a clarification on the way that ordinance reads, where it says that we should, where possible, even though we don't really control streets and lanes.
Like I said, we'll get a zoning determination letter, and I think that will address a lot of your concerns, because at least the city will have weighed in on how they are interpreting that section of the ordinance, and I think that's something that's important.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. We might need a minute since we lost half our people.
Apologies. Bear with us for a few moments so we can make sure we have a proper quorum. All right, Rohan, we can get started.
This is Rohan again, planner from the MPC. Good afternoon, everyone. This is a similar tangent on a different circle, but we're now looking at the part two design details for 20 through 24 East Oglethorpe mixed use development. The proposal is a 6-story mixed use building. The height and mass was approved in May 2025, and this submittal provides materials, fenestrations, balconies, storefronts, canopies, cornices, lighting, and colors. And writing again the context. The site's a non-contributing property in the landmark local historic district, corner of East Oglethorpe and Drayton. Currently, 2 1-story masonry commercial buildings whose demolition has been approved in February 2025. Height and mass approved in May 2025 and surrounded by contributing masonry buildings, 3 to 5 stories, and large-scale institutions. Here we see the elevation that is currently under review that we're looking at, and the findings for the part two design details. The design standards for exterior walls and materials. I'll take this through segment by segment. So the primary material here is ACME Norwood modular brick. The accents are natural quarry stone veneers and the panels being ribbed stone that are non-reflective. It meets the bonus height requirements where it talks if you have a bonus story, you need greater than 30% being natural stone. And there's no prohibitive materials that are being used or any insulation being covering any materials. Standards are met. And when it comes to the windows and storefronts, windows, Marvin Ultimate aluminum clad casements, and the vertical proportions and detailing are consistent. Storefronts, clear low E glass with bronze aluminum framing, transparent and compatible. Standards are met. Talking about balconies, canopies, and lighting. Balconies are painted metal, traditional proportions, compatible with the district. Canopies painted metal, again, at the primary entrances. Scale and the clearance is appropriate. Lighting is decorative wall-mounted lanterns that are made of metal and glass. They're compatible and the standards are met. Considering the large-scale development standards, masonry walls to exceed the 75% coverage on all street-facing facades. Natural quarried stone is used and complies fully with section 7.8.10.T for large-scale development material requirements as well. And here staff has prepared a table to address each material, what's allowed, what's a review and reason for approval and denial for each of the material. And the board can feel free to go through it and address any questions, if any. And here the petitioner has shown the materials that were mentioned earlier, and these are the examples of the windows, and here you can see further details, and these staff finds these to be meeting the standards. So the staff's recommendation is to approve the part two design details for 20 through 24 East Oglethorpe Avenue as requested, because the proposed materials, fenestration, balcony, storefront, canopies, cornices, lighting, and color selections
are visually compatible with the contributing buildings in the district, meet the applicable visual compatibility criteria, and comply with the Savannah Downtown Historic District design standards, including large-scale development material requirements. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rohan. Are there questions for staff? Okay. The petitioner, please come forward and state your name. Thank you, Rohan.
Can I pull up the petition? Top one. Yeah, there it is. Good afternoon. I'm Andy Lynch with Lynch Associates Architects. I'm here with our project team, including my partner, Becky Lynch, and the owner's attorney, Harold Yellen. First, I want to thank MPC and HSF for all their help on this project. I know we've met a number of times over the last several months and appreciate their input on the project as it's moved forward. I'm just going to jump to the last page. Oops. I'll just talk from this mostly. By and large, the part two submission is almost identical to the part one submission with a couple of minor modifications, increased details, and some color changes. We made some minor adjustments to the opening sizes across the building, the window opening sizes. Most notably, we changed the upper story upper story windows to an arch configuration, and also changed some of the accent windows on the west elevation, which you can see here, to a smaller configuration. The only other noticeable change we made was on the ground floor. Go to the plan real quick, where we eliminated a small courtyard that existed on the back of the property on the long lane in order to make room for some additional parking spaces. As the project is going to most likely be a residential project versus a potential hotel that originally the owner was considering, the screen wall that was proposed in the part one will stay in place to screen the parking, although it will not extend across the back of the lane to enclose the what was the courtyard. As far as the part two materials and detail submission, our approach has been consistent from the part one submission to use complementary masonry materials, natural limestone, and contrasting accent metals on both the larger mass of the building and the smaller three-story mass. We wanted to keep the buildings consistent as a single building, but differentiate them with the material use. Per the bonus story requirements, we exceeded the 30% requirement for quarried stone and meet the 100% modular masonry requirements on all street-facing facades. We're currently proposing that the ground floor and the upper level, so basically the storefront level and the top floor here, are shown as our limestone to strengthen the base metal top requirements. In our discussion with the HSF Architectural Review Committee, they commented that they might prefer to see that top floor to be brick to keep it more consistent with the middle portion of the building. We didn't object to that whatsoever. However, it might not meet the quarried stone requirement. So we kept it for now, but it's a discussion topic that we'd like to discuss with you all. We decided to extend the stone material over the full three stories of the smaller mass of the building. Pull up. On this portion of the building, to give it a slightly different character at street level and to better define the residential entry from the commercial entry further to the west, or to the east, I'm sorry. We added additional stone and brick detailing throughout the building, but especially at the ground floor levels, at the window openings and around the balconies with some additional banding and detail work around the windows. We added metal panel detailing at the balcony levels and carried this fluted detailing, which you can see here, through the balcony areas into the canopies and carried it over to some of the larger window massings on the other portions of the building. The bronze color was planned to be used on all the window openings throughout the building, balconies, awnings, upper and the upper cornice areas, as well as the lower screen wall that we talked about that's screening the parking area. So these are just some enlarged details showing the brick selections and how we were utilizing the stone panels. Some of these final drawings here just detailed more of the balcony projections. This is the screen wall we talked about earlier with the bronze metal decorative paneling. Canopy, and this is the awning over the residential portion of the building. As staff had mentioned, these are the selections that we are currently contemplating. And some of the other products. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Sorry, I have one question.
Yes, sir.
We were told that the Superior Court has dismissed the petition to stay this. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, but I have the owner's attorney here. He'll speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Harold Yellen for the petitioner. It's my understanding that there was a hearing yesterday and that there was an order issued this morning. Essentially, the Ballastone Inn property had brought a lawsuit against Oglethorpe Avenue, the petitioner here today. As you may recall, your height and mass decision here was appealed to ZBA. ZBA denied that appeal. And then that petition was appealed to Superior Court. It was argued in Superior Court that y'all could not hear this today. The judge ruled against the petitioner. It's just a very simple two-page. It says, having read and considered the petitioner's motion for contempt and for enforcement of an automatic stay, they've listened to the argument made by counsel at a hearing yesterday. The court denies the motion for contempt. It also dismisses the petition for review. In the very last sentence, it says the motion brought by the Ballastone to stay this proceeding, matter number 24004958, COA before the Spanish Sword District Board of Review, scheduled for today, is denied. So I'm happy to provide a copy if you
need to. That's fine. I just wanted to make sure that the information we were given was correct.
Mr. Jones, of course, can disagree with the Superior Court judge, and he can also disagree with the city attorney, as we're all.
I appreciate it. He can file another lawsuit, and they can sue you on a different basis. But that's not the point.
All you need for a lawsuit is a lawyer. So all I know is what I have today: a hearing yesterday, an order this morning. You can hear this petition.
You've answered my question, which is that we're actually operating within the law. That's all. Yes.
Are there additional questions for the applicant?
I guess I have two questions, please. Could you put up the three-dimensional elevation of the side that faces the Ballastone Inn, please?
Talking about this, the west elevation?
Yes, thank you. Sir. You know, I know you spent a lot of time and effort and fine detailing on the main facades of the building. But for me, this is a big concern. And, you know, while if you put up a three-dimensional, you know, you're trying to give the impression that this is a smaller building next to the Ballastone, but really this facade is all one plane. So my two questions are, is there a way reasonably that you could continue your third floor cornice line across the front of the building to the back of the building and give the, you know, a stronger sense that there's a bottom to this and then there's a top to this? So do you see where I'm?
I'm not
sure. Okay, so go back to the.
Are you talking about extending this strong cornice line across?
I'm starting with the top of the three-story building on the left. Okay, that cornice line. So if you can go back to the side elevation. You know, I know you've got windows there, but none of the windows are operable. So, you know, for me, if you could continue that line across, I think you would diminish the mass of this elevation, not only for your neighbor, but for, you know, the visual context of this side of the building, which is going to be very visible from many places.
I don't think we'd have any issue with continuing this cornice across here. I would have concerns about the larger projecting cornice.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and I'm not, I think we're past the point where you could recess this, but I just think if you continue that horizontal line, you'd get a sense that there was a bottom and a top and not just one big long straight wall.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
So then if you look at the Oglethorpe side of this elevation. Okay. So the other thing that I'm disturbed about is that, you know, you've got this six-story building on the left residential entrance area, and the roof really just ties into the roof of the main large building. Could you lower that a little bit and just give, you know, the main building its own big square roof and presence, and then make this left building subservient to that building and just give a little more relief that it's not really one big square building, but there are actually two.
Yes, ma'am. Again, I think this is kind of goes back to the discussions we had in the part one submission. There are currently all the elevators are, the elevator bank is behind this wall. And so we don't really have the ability to lower this. We have set it back considerably in the part one where it's about 25 feet from the building facade, which we think it will be fairly visible, if at all visible, which is kind of the point of what we had done in the part one submission. So, I'm not sure we could lower this anymore, especially given that we're kind of past that part one decision at this point, but we could look at it a little bit further.
Again, I think this is something subtle, but the point is to continue to differentiate the big main building and then what we're hoping is a transition building that appears smaller and less tied to the big building and more of a separate transition.
Yes, ma'am. I will say that we did change, I didn't notate that there was a second brick selection, but we are using a lighter color material that's differentiating itself from the darker brick that we're using on the main mass of the building and the additional floors on top of the third story. So we were trying to mitigate the mass a little bit with the use of color and material.
I think it's important.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, the other thing, and I was going to save it, but I might as well bring it up for now, is on those, the other side of the Oglethorpe side. Okay, where you have you've got the three-story facade, and then you have two stories that are recessed. I think you'd be well served to take out that dark spandrel and make that window mass lighter. So it isn't, you know, that is the biggest, darkest mass of windows on the project. And just maybe keep the windows and doors dark, but take that spandrel and lighten it up so it doesn't appear as one big dark something that catches your eye.
Sure. We could look at it. I think the intent of this was to, again, try to tie in, you know, we didn't want it to be so different from the larger mass of the building, so they were totally disconnected. So, again, we took these small little moments to try to incorporate detailing that matched on both the masses, so it was a little more cohesive.
I think it would still work if you just took the spandrel out or lightened it up so it was not, a different dark color that was attracting your eye. You know, you've got these vertical window banks with the dark doors and balconies that are very attractive, but they're vertical. This is more like a square, heavy-looking chunk up there. I don't oppose it on the ground level, but I think up at the top, the doors are fine. I think it's just the spandrel. If you could lighten that up, it would recede. And I think the point is to make that area recede and not draw attention to itself.
Yes, sir.
Those are my comments.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the applicant? Oh, Mr. Coleman. Go ahead, Tom. That's okay. Go ahead, Tom. You can.
Okay. Just quickly, side view looking east down the lane on one of these pictures?
No, unfortunately, we just have these two.
Okay.
All right. Renderings. All right.
Thank you.
We figured thought these were the two prominent elevations.
Mr. Coleman.
Yeah, I guess just following up on the comments about the windows and all that and the color back there. I think when you're looking at it head on in an elevation, those read a certain way that I don't feel impact the building in reality in how you step that back. I think that the stepping back and that feel of that being a unified glazing element with that is actually stronger than trying to break it. So I have to disagree with my colleague that makes it more pronounced. I think that it needs to read as something back there along with what you've done. So I think visually it does work for me because it sits back and these receding masses will effectively do what you're talking about doing. And I agree that you probably can't pull that back piece back and drop it because I raised the issue with you about the elevator tower not getting taller as opposed to getting lower. So I think that what's been done there, it probably does work. And I do agree with her continuing the two bands to connect them. I do feel that that is a move that will help diminish that from that side elevation. But the ballast stone end is there, and you have to think about the fact that a lot of what you're seeing will be blocked by that, except from the lane, which is where you'll see more of those masses from the lane side as opposed to the Oglethorpe side.
Yes. I didn't mention that we did one small change that we did make from the part one as we broke this parapet, which was masonry all the way across previously, and we created more of a pilaster configuration to try to relate it to those windows, again, to try to help mitigate the mass a little bit.
Any additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Lynch. I do have some public comment cards. I'm terrible at reading handwriting today, but Willie, are you still here? All right. Sorry, Willie. Champ Kleeman, I appreciate your very neat handwriting, Champ.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity to allow me to address the board. This board's mission purpose statement, I believe I understood at the beginning, was to preserve the cultural, educational, and historical significance of our historic district. Is that correct? Well, my fear is that by having these buildings that totally overshadow their neighbors, these new builds, it will dilute our concentration of historic buildings in this area, potentially causing our sort of designation as a national historic landmark to be reconsidered. I oppose the building, this building being built and others, and thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon, Andrew Jones. I'm here in my capacity as counsel for the Ballastone Inn. And just for your information, after I was retained by the Ballastone Inn, I recused myself from any future decisions that the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition would make on this building. So this is solely on behalf of the Ballastone. And our client does object, and what I want to point out for the record is that, as you know, the ZBA affirmed your Part 1 decision. In the ZBA, the MPC confirmed to the ZBA what you approved in your Part 1, and it's the image on the left. So that is in the MPC staff report to the ZBA dated July the 24th. And it said underneath revised proposal HDBR approved. So as a matter of record, that is what you approved. It also, the image itself without the caption below is also what Jonathan Mellon had shown you at the Part 1 hearing in the MPC staff report. Now, as you know, this version does not show a visible stair tower and elevator shaft for the upper three floors. This shaded color is the background, the sky. That was a major issue that we brought up at that time. And, of course, that massing does exist. So you're approving a building with substantially greater height and mass than what the record says you approve. Now, Ms. Gwynn and Mr. Coleman did attend the ZBA hearing and did not object to the characterization of this image as the HDBR approved version. So we contend that you've waived your right to object to this image as being what you approved. And I know that many of you genuinely believe that you approved the entire stair tower and elevator shaft, but that's not really what the record shows. So I'm sure there'll be opposite views of this, but we contend that the Part 1 approval as affirmed by the ZBA is not sufficient for the Part 2, since the new design obviously has the upper stair tower and elevator shaft. I will just for the applicant's benefit, the case today.
You would start to wrap up your comments.
Okay. The case today was dismissed. The court took a position that was extremely different from the position that the city had taken, for example, for years, that Part 1 and Part 2 were separate proceedings. It now treats it as a single proceeding that has to be appealed.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Thank you.
I have a speaker card for Artis Wood, but I see that she is no longer with us. I also have a speaker card for Harold Yellen. Okay. Okay. Would the applicant like to respond to public comment?
I'll just respond briefly that the image on the left is not the image that was in our final packet that y'all reviewed, that was made abundantly clear in the appeals meeting, and it's not what y'all approved, so that's all I'd say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. At this time, we'll enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
My main comment about this really relates to the fact that we're permitting buildings that are too tall and too wide and too massive for the sites that they're in comparison to what's around them. And since we spend a lot of time in Nova Scotia every year, very close to Halifax, I can assure you that within 10 years, if you abandon your design principles, you can take a city, which was actually a very attractive city on a beautiful harbor, and make it into a very unattractive city on a beautiful harbor. The risk that we have in Savannah is that Savannah downtown depends on the tourism industry and the fact that this is a beautiful city. We are in the process of ripping that up, and we need to be very mindful of the fact that approving ever taller buildings on some flimsy excuse is a bad idea. And visual appropriateness does matter. We should be very cautious about, you know, killing the goose. Thank you.
Mr. Coleman.
No comments.
Ms. Rowan.
I just want to remind my fellow board members that we have already approved the height and mass of this building, and we are here solely to just vote on the design details.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan, for that clarification. And I'll add comments since I was addressed by public comment. Mr. Coleman and I attended that meeting virtually, so we were not looking at the same visuals. And I don't want to speak for Mr. Coleman, but for myself, I'm very clear what we approved, very clear what is in the public record for this body, whose meetings I do attend and preside over. So making reference to us at by absence of comment, acknowledging some drawing that signifies our approval is just not an accurate representation. Ms. Woodfield.
I think I've made my comments about the things that are concerning to me. I stand by them. I think you're putting a lot of effort, and this will be a significant building. The mass has been approved, so I think we're tweaking some details that I think will make a difference. And besides that, I think, you know, we'll just let you get on with it and move along with the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson.
Well, I agree. I like the banding of the applicant that how'd you describe them around the back there? Mm-hmm. But I kind of go with Cedric Coleman on the, this, what's that part called? You're the architect.
The spandrel.
The spandrel. Yes. Thank you. And Sam, I did this. I got in all sorts of trouble and some kind of lawsuit. So I just simply say that I support staff recommendation, which seems to be thorough and complete and is allowed under our ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I'll go around one more time. Mr. Helms.
No comment.
Mr. Coleman.
No comment.
Ms. Rowan.
No additional comments.
Ms. Woodfield.
No additional comments.
Mr. Thompson.
Ditto, no additional.
Thank you. At this time, I will open the floor for a motion. Rowan? Ms. Rowan, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition of Lynch Associate Architects 24-00495-8-COA as requested because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. The motion on the floor is to approve the application as submitted. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
I'd rather abstain if I could.
You can't after you've participated in discussion.
Okay.
And we need you for a quorum.
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That application is approved as presented. We will now move to our last agenda item. Is Ellen Harris still with us? Okay. It's back to item number 8, petition by Ethos Preservation, Ellen Harris, file number 25-003996, COA for 220 East Taylor Street. Oh, yes, and welcome back, Ms. Hamer.
Jody Brown, again, presenting the project for 220 East Taylor Street. Constructed as a row house in the Georgian style, built in 1868, it is a contributing resource to the historic district. The applicant is proposing to demolish the existing non-historic rear deck and replace it. The existing deck was constructed circa 2015. The new rear deck will feature a shed roof, gutters, and a spiral staircase. There will be no modifications to the rear facade of the historic house. The first floor under the proposed deck will be split into two sections. The eastern half will be opened and accessed from an existing door. This portion of the ground floor will also feature a ceiling fan, which will not be visible outside of the rear yard. The western portion will be enclosed by horizontal pressure-treated wood stained gray. The enclosure will hide the existing condenser units. A metal spiral staircase that provides access to the second floor will also be centrally located. The deck and the associated roofing structure will be supported by 6x6 columns that match the design of the columns used at the front porch, and the decks will be surrounded by a 3-foot metal railing with evenly spaced pickets. The shed roof will be sheathed with the standing seam metal roofing, and the half-round gutter will be on the north side with the downspout at the northeast corner. Based on staff's review of the project, staff recommends to approve the request for construction of a rear deck with a roof, gutter, and spiral staircase at 220 East Taylor Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff? Thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record? You can also introduce your partner as well.
Thank you. My name is Ellen Harris with Ethos Preservation, and my associate here is Beatrice Seelander. Thank you very much for accommodating my request to move this lower on the agenda. I appreciate that, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have about this project.
Thank you, Ms. Harris. Are there questions for the applicant?
Save the best for last. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any public comment cards on this either, so at this time I'll enter into board discussion. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Thompson?
I support staff recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
Yes, I think I've looked at it carefully and support the staff's recommendation.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Rowan?
I support staff's recommendation for approval.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
No comment.
All right, I'm not going to go around again, and I will now open the floor for a motion.
Rowan?
Ms. Rowan, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 22 East Taylor Street, 25-003996-COA, as requested because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Okay, the motion on the floor is to approve the petition for 220 East Taylor Street as submitted. Do I have a second?
Hamer, second.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Sorry, Ms. Rowan. Aye. Mr. Coleman.
Aye.
Mr. Helms.
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That application is approved. Thank you, Ms. Harris, and thank you to your associate as well for your patience today. The staff reviews are now posted online, so don't require a vote or approval, just an acknowledgement. We don't have any work performed without a certificate of appropriateness. Nothing has been deferred to staff, as is customary. Stamp drawings and inspection report is attached to the agenda. If there's no other business, I will move to adjourn. So adjourn. Ooh, baby.